Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to Zero Pucks Given, the UK ice hockey podcast. We're in partnership with the Hockey Art Co, hockey clothing for hockey people, worn by the best and hated by the rest. Listeners to Zero Pucks Given get a 10% discount off everything site-wide at hockeyartclothing.co.uk. Just use the code ZP10 upon checkout to get your discount. Make sure you check out the new club series, new t-shirts, hoodies, hats and shorts. All hockey-inspired clothing, all fantastic quality and all really good stuff as well. We are also in partnership with Manscaped, redefining the gentleman with top-of-the-range male grooming products. We've got a couple of days left now with the sponsorship deal for you to get 20% off of everything and free shipping when you go to manscaped.com. Have a look for what you want. I would recommend the Performance Package 5.0, where you get the lawnmower, the weed whacker, the crop preserver and the crop soother, as well as some tasty little boxer shorts and a free t-shirt in a nice wash bag. And you can get that at manscaped.com and then enter the code ZEROPUCKS20, all caps, all one word, ZEROPUCKS20. Get your 20% off and your free shipping. I think we've got till about April the 20th for you to do that. So don't waste time. Get in there and get that done. And we are on the Sports Social Podcast Network, the biggest sports podcast network in Europe, boasting plenty of podcasts, over 400 now, from all sorts of sports, from ex-athletes to fans to journalists. Anything you want about any sport, I'm pretty sure you will find it on the Sports Social Podcast Network, including us. Well, this is episode 102. This is probably, more than likely, the last episode of this season, which will put it down to, I think, 69 episodes that we've crushed out this season. So absolutely incredible stuff that we've been putting these out. This episode is going to be a little bit of a review of the season. I'm going to start with some news that came out on the social media, though. We are creating at Zero Pucks Given a ZPG network, going to try and get as many clubs as possible to have their own podcasts, to have a fan or someone within the club hosting their own podcast, talking about the latest news, the match reports, the roster updates, getting the coaches' thoughts through there so that you've kind of got one hub where you can find all your details. Zero Pucks Given as a whole will remain the same. The podcast will still have all the latest news. It will have all the roster updates, all the interviews with all the players and the coaches from around the league and around the extended hockey world. But the ZPG network is going to give fans that little bit of almost bias, that little bit of thing that's just theirs. Already confirmed for next year, we've got ZPG Devils covering everything on the South Coast. ZPG Buffalo, they're going to be covering the rise of the Basingstoke Buffalo as they go into next season after a victorious year this year, looking to grow and expand what they're doing and hopefully getting those repairs done at that rink so that we can start to see that club really, really move forward. And ZPG City Stars are going to be covering everything that's going on in Oxford as well. So if you want to get involved, if you think you can host your own podcast talking about your own club, then get in touch with me. We can set you up on the ZPG network, and then we can all move forward together as one, almost one big UK ice hockey monster. So that we can get as much content out there for everybody as possible. You don't really need much to start with. Just a smartphone will probably get you through. Just need audio recording. Everything that you do can be sent to me. I can upload it onto the platform, and then we can get it through that way, get it out there to as many people as possible, and start to grow the sport that we all love so much in this country. Well, as I said, anyway, this episode is a little bit of a review. Not even a little bit. Actually, if you've looked down at the clock just down there, it's quite a long one. We're going to touch a little bit in the north. We're going to find out what happened in the Morley division this year with the league, the cup and the playoffs. And then I will be joined by Chris Beale, who was my commentary partner for the playoff weekend. And we're going to discuss everything from the Britain division. So let's start up north, see what went on there. This guy is, he was the first guy that ever reached out to me when I started Zero Pucks Given. So we've been talking for quite a while. He's the host of the Hawks Talk podcast for Blackburn Hawks. He's the commentator on their live stream, and he's a producer for our friends over at 4000 and Counting. A massive welcome to Graham Hamilton. Graham Hamilton, how you doing, fella?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Very, very good indeed. You're joining me on ZPG to discuss the North One, the Morley division, the winners, cup winners, the playoff winners. But you've got quite a lot sort of goes on yourself. You're the Blackburn Hawks Talk podcast host. You commentate on their live stream, and you are a producer from 4000 and Counting. So where do you do with your spare time?
Just hockey, 100% yeah. Hockey. It's a bit strange being sat on this side of the microphone, to be honest.
It's no different whatsoever. Absolutely no different whatsoever. But odd interruption there. But yeah, so starting with North One, obviously as a Blackburn fan, I mean, you guys have had a hell of a year. You were sort of fighting with Billingham for that league title, took the cup off of them in quite spectacular style, and then took the playoffs as well.
Yeah, it's been a journey of a season, to be honest. I think a lot of it stems from Solway making that step up, to be honest. No disrespect to them. They dominated that league for a very, very, very long time. Every credit to them. And them taking that step up has really made that league so competitive.
Opened it right up.
Yeah, 100%. Every team has the capability of beating any other team in that league this season. It's been an exciting season to be a part of, really. Billingham deserve to win the league. They've been great throughout it. Very full roster, decent players. Solihull as well, you've got to give a shout out to them as well. They ran in with Billingham to the end as well. Only 2 points off them in the league. It's been a good season, really has.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't call it. We ended up not being able to do a sort of a pre-season review. We couldn't really get a time schedule that worked for us both. But I was, the Solihull Barons, it was between them and the Hawks for me. I hadn't really counted the Stars as doing a great deal up north. But as you say, they really took it by storm and stumbled to the championship a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, they slowed down a little bit towards the end. The results sort of came off, really. I think what's worked for Billingham is, since COVID, they let a lot of players go, from my understanding. Players moved on to different things, and they sort of went with the junior players and gave a lot of them opportunities. Obviously, they had the core group that they've had for a long time, like Sir Chris Sykes and people like that. But then really gave this youth a chance, and it's paid off for them because they've just developed this squad and roster that's just pushed forward and improved every year.
Yeah, and they've got their second side as well, the Billingham Buccaneers, who took the later playoffs as well this year. So it's been a successful year all round in Billingham.
Yeah, it was a good game to watch, that game in Sheffield between them and the Tigers. I think everyone had the Tigers winning that weekend. And comfortably, but the Buccaneers came and they gave them a real good game. It was a good game to watch, that, actually.
Yeah, and of course, in the North One playoff finals, it was the same as the Cup. It was Blackburn against Billingham, and that was some game, wasn't it?
Oh, unbelievable. Like, just thinking about it, end of first period, we were 2-0 down, and I thought, it's done here. Like, they were just really slow coming out of the blocks, Blackburn. And then end of the second period, 3-1. And I think that end of that second period came at the right time for the Stars because we'd really come back into it. James Royd's number 66 for the Hawks. He just kind of picked us up on his back and took us. And then coming into the end at third, 3-3, going into overtime. Always good as a neutral, but when it's your team, it's not a nice position to be in.
No, I could only imagine. And then it went all the way, didn't it? It went to the shootout.
All the way to penalty shots. And credit where it's due, Billingham netminder, Tom Brown, probably the best netminder in the league, I'll be honest. So going into that penalty shootout as a Hawks fan, this is going to be tough.
Yeah, but, I suppose. Yeah, you're thinking especially if he's particularly good on penalty shots, but it was 3-0 in the end on penalty shots, wasn't it?
Yeah, they didn't score any. First up for them, I think, was Roland Grittans, which is arguably top five forward in the Morrill League. He missed his, and then David Gironox, one of our imports, scored. So the nerves are starting to turn to excitement at this point. Then the second one, they missed theirs. I think it was Chris Sykes or Elder, I can't remember. They missed that one. We scored it. Jacob Lutwich, who's an outstanding player. Very, very lucky to have him at Blackburn. Really great player. Ex-Manchester Storm, so there's a great calibre there. And he's only a young lad as well, so that lots of progress and stuff to come from him. And then Billingham missed the third penalty. And again, that excitement's building now. That fizzy bottle's getting ready to explode. And they missed their third, and then arguably the best forward in the league, Adam Barnes. Just phenomenal. Composure, scored, that were it. Sticks and gloves in the air, pint pots everywhere in the air. It was good.
Were you just there as a fan?
Yeah, I didn't do... it was, I think, Drop the Puck who did the coverage for the league. I don't know if you've ever caught any of their stuff.
I have, yeah.
They've done highlights packages and things in the past, and they used to cover the Widnes Wild, one of the Morrill League teams. They used to live stream their games. I was going to do some commentary with them, but I decided just to enjoy the weekend as a fan, really.
Yeah, what a weekend to decide to do that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I don't think I'd have been much use on the Saturday. I had quite a few beverages.
Well, I've been saying back to a few people that were at Ali Pally for the South 1 finals. South 1 and South 2.
Yeah,
it's a blur. I can't remember really what happened. I don't know what I said. I don't know how it came out. I remember being incredibly excited and emotional at the final.
Definitely.
When Chumps would have won it. But yeah, I can't wait to watch him back now because it is just a blur.
How did you find your first time doing commentary?
I loved every second of it. It's as a kid, I wanted to be a football commentator. That was my dream job. I wanted to work in sports radio at the time. That wasn't even a thing. Like Talk Sport wasn't a thing. BBC Five Live only ever covered live sport. They didn't actually have like shows. And I never really got to do it. I did a little bit of radio production on a sports show in Essex back in the day, but that was old school. That was reel to reel, cutting it with a Stanley blade and sticking it together.
Wow.
Really old school. So when I was offered the chance to do it, I absolutely jumped at it and was initially overly excited. And then when I got to the arena and Chris Beale, who I was doing it with, said to me, he said, it'll be no different than doing your podcast, but just remember, we can't edit this. Once you've said it, it's out there.
Yeah.
And then it kind of hit me a little bit what we were doing. But I think between Chris and myself, we called three games each. He called Streatham, I called Chelmsford, which was an experience. Chris is really experienced, so doing it with him was fantastic. Doing the doing the South 2 teams was a bit difficult because it's not a league that I watch.
Yeah.
Very often, I'm not familiar with a lot of the players, so by the third period, we kind of had it with who was who by the numbers. We'd kind of picked up what lines who was playing with who, so if one was there, you'd expect to see the other. But yeah, I loved every second of it. And the Tim and Lauren, who were doing the stream, who do some work with the Milton Keynes Thunder, have offered me to come to Milton Keynes and commentate when Chelmsford play there. So I'll be taking them up on that next season. But it's Yeah, in all honesty, it might sound a little bit blowing me on trumpet. I think I was born to do it. I think I was absolutely perfect for it.
I understand where you're coming from. I mean, you do a lot with the media, with your podcast. And one thing that I struggled with at first when I started doing the commentary for the Hawks games for like the YouTube channel and things was you don't really take the game in, I found at first. And it's having that to seeing what's going on and then bypassing your brain and just saying what's going on, because when you think about it, it's already like another two passes have gone.
Yeah, which is exactly how I ended up playing it and why I can't remember it, because as you say, it was just autopilot. My brain was just saying what my eyes were seeing. So it was probably actually, it was a little, I was saying this to one of my friends at the weekend, it was probably a little bit more of a radio-esque commentary than a TV one, because I was quite descriptive as to what was going on and where it was happening. And then in my head I'm thinking, well, people can, they know, they can see, they're watching it.
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't there? Because with TV you can, or video, you can let the game play a little bit. You don't have to, he's passed to him. You don't have to do that as much. You can let the game flow a little bit.
Yeah.
You can also do some colour stuff as well. If you have another commentator, you can have like little bits of banter and some statistics chucked in there and stuff.
Yeah, which we both did, actually. Chris did a lot more homework than I did. You know, with all the stats brilliantly provided by Joe Scutts, of course, at nrhlstats.wordpress.com. We both had some sort of extensive handwritten notes that we went to. We had a few quips about each team that were in there. We had a few movie quote-offs and things like that. So, yeah. A few of them started coming back to me. I'm pretty sure we did a little bit of dodgeball, some Waterboy and a few other things in there. Definitely some Top Gun puns during the Slough Jets.
We do that with the Hull Jets. Yeah, we did that.
But as I said, I'll have to watch it back to confirm everything. But yeah, for my first ever weekend on commentary, to get to commentate on my own team winning the playoffs. And then after that happening, I released episode 100 of my podcast. I cannot believe I'm ever going to top that.
Some things are just written, aren't they?
Yeah. I would never have been able to plan it like that. It just never would have worked if I tried to plan it.
I think they might ask you back next year to do them if Chelmsford would get there.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think even if they don't, I'd still like to think I've got a shout at doing it, because I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it was... How did you find the weekend as a whole, being joint with the two leagues?
I liked it. The only thing I didn't like was the face-off times, but I suppose that logistically there's not a lot you can do about that. I hate the expression, but it is what it is. Mm. There's that many games, and you know yourself how long a game can take. But our game on the Saturday night was at 8 o'clock face-off, which... playing again the next day, it's not the best, really. I'd have maybe switched it and had the two Div 1 games in the middle and then start and end being Div 2, maybe. But then again, I suppose some of it's trying to keep crowds in the building as well, because I'm sure it's the same in the South as it is in the North, that Div 1 teams are better supported than the Div 2 teams.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some element of that in there, but I think that's one thing I'd change, because I think it affected us going into that semi-final with the 8 o'clock face-off, because some of our lads were there from the beginning, really, like the 10 o'clock face-off. So and you just sat around doing there. I mean, you know yourself, if you just sit around all day, you get a bit lethargic and things like that. And a sport that's so fast and intense, I think that affected us a little bit at the start of that semi-final game. But as a whole, I thought it was fantastic. I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but there's a lot of people that may be quite new to the sport or don't understand why there's no promotion and relegation. But I think having the Div 1 and Div 2 teams in the same weekend, it gives you an insight of why there isn't that, because there is a jump in standard, quite a big one.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that was the first live NHL 2 that I've ever taken in. I was impressed. It was better than I thought it was going to be, because as you say, we know that there is a jump. A lot of the two sides are pay to play, rather than being on any sort of contract where they're getting expenses paid for them or anything like that. And some guys, it is just that they can't commit to the schedule of the higher division. So I think that then obviously brings the quality up. Similar to what's happened in the, especially one in the South this year, there's a lot of National League players that couldn't commit to that schedule. So they've played in the Britain division, which is really up the quality.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, I think it was, I was impressed with the quality, particularly from the Guildford Phoenix and Basingstoke Buffalo semi-final. That was incredibly entertaining to watch. The Phantoms against the Huskies was a little bit more of a harder, especially a harder game to call.
Yeah.
It was very attritional. But they dug out the good result in the end, the Huskies. And that did affect the crowd because we had a home team.
Yeah.
Playing in that playoff final. So there were a lot of Huskies fans in there. But it was a bit of a surprise because last year the Huskies hosted the NIHL 2 finals. And the place was sold out, like rammed all weekend.
Yeah.
And this year, with the two leagues joint, it wasn't sold out. And the Huskies were at home. So that was, and I'd kind of said before, when they announced that it was going to be a joint effort and it was going to be at Ali Pally and not Milton Keynes or something like that, I sort of said, well, Britain teams, NIHL 1 teams, they've only got themselves to blame.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Because for the last few years, we've been at Milton Keynes for a weekend in a 2,200 capacity arena with 300 people. And one, it looks shite because the seats are empty. The atmosphere is not there because there's like one group of fans over there, one group of fans over there. So they can't really moan that it got sort of all put together like that. And then even in a smaller arena, they still didn't sell it out. I know that London may have had a bit of an issue on it. It was very expensive to stay around that area. Fortunately, I had family that lived relatively close, so I didn't struggle with that. But yeah, I think that's in my head. I think that's the only thing it could have possibly been. It's just the London prices putting people off, because it was a quality weekend. As you say, you can't do a great deal about the face-off times. If you're going to put four games in a day, there are only so many hours in the day.
Yes, yeah, true. It's true. Yeah.
And I think we started at 10:30 at Ali Pally.
Yeah,
and that was Guildford against Basingstoke, who both had a similar sort of distance and travel to get in. And as you say, it is what it is. You can only do what you can do with it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think that, like you say, I think I would have possibly liked to have seen NIHL 2 semi-finals back-to-back and then the ones back-to-back so that everyone got a similar recovery time.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
But, yeah, from the late night game, Chelmsford was also the 8 o'clock game at Ali Pally. Unfortunately, they've got it sewn up by the end of the second, so they kind of took the third off.
Yeah.
To recover. But they're as we said, it is what it is. If you're going to squeeze four games in a day, someone's going to have to face off at 10:30, someone's going to have to face off at 8 p.m.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to get around it.
I don't know if you've ever been to Ice Sheffield, but to be fair, it's a fantastic venue, and I think, particularly for the North, it was the right venue. I think it's maybe from teams like the North East, teams like your Billinghams, your Whitleys, it's a little bit further maybe. But from where I am, just outside Preston, it's about an hour and 45, so it's not too far. It's quite central, really, and it's a big venue with a lot of stuff around there, like hotels and bars, and it's a good night out, Sheffield, as well. So
yeah.
I think they did a good job, and the team from England Ice Hockey that were there, Steve Merry, I can't remember the lady's name, I'm sorry, but it was well run. I genuinely have no issues with it. I had a really good time.
Yeah.
Really good time.
Yeah, I haven't actually heard anyone complain about the weekend, the way it was organised, the way it went. I've heard nothing but glowing reports. And as you say, yeah, England Ice Hockey had Danny Perchin, Lucy Spolton, and a few others there who all did a fantastic job of keeping it running and keeping myself and Chris lubricated throughout the day. But we back a little bit more with Blackburn. You obviously got your relatively local derby with the Deeside Dragons.
Yeah.
That was a bit fiery this year, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's been It's always a good game against the Dragons. There's a lot of players that have played for Blackburn that now play for the Dragons in that first season back after COVID. So there's a little bit of stuff like that built up.
Is it the M57 Derby? Is that what they call it?
M56 Cup. That's sort of a local title. Obviously, we've won 3 trophies this year, 2 major trophies, if you will, and 1 local title. It's named after the motorway that runs towards Deeside, or towards that part of the world. Weirdly enough, Blackburn aren't on it, but they're not on that stretch of motorway, but I suppose you've got to call it something, haven't you?
Is it just off the top bit of the M6 when you get to Darwin, isn't it? Blackburn's going up there, yeah.
Yeah, it's the M65 to go to. So M6, then M65 across to Blackburn.
Yeah, yeah. I've not actually been to Blackburn. I've been to Burnley.
But sorry about that.
I know. I did actually at the weekend. I listed that as the grimmest place in the UK.
I'd agree with that. But yeah, but Deeside, very good roster. Like I said, a few of them played for the Hawks a few seasons ago. It does get a bit fiery, which is good for the fans as well. Like, rivalry is good in any sport, isn't it?
Yeah.
Both for the fans and the players, it gives them something, a little bit of extra spice for them to play towards as well, doesn't it? So,
but there was a particular incident that gained a little bit of national press, actually. I think the police were involved at some point as well. Was there a tunnel bust-up or a changing room bust-up?
Yeah, something along them lines. I'm not privy 100% in terms of what happened, but there was an incident that did happen. Allegedly between a Hawks player and a Deeside player. I'm not 100% sure on the facts, so I don't want to incriminate myself or other people. But,
no, we don't want you spilling any unconfirmed things.
But, I believe that caused a fixture not to be played and other things. It got a bit, pardon the term, but it got a bit fiery from both sides.
But looking down the table here for the league, it's got 7 teams qualifying for the playoffs rather than 8. How does that work then?
They've obviously just not updated it. It comes that the Lions were the 8th one.
The Lions were, because the Lions did finish in 8th, just a point ahead of the Skivitars. I mean, I think that was actually due to having 1 extra overtime loss and getting the point. That's the point they had. They actually lost more games, which is astonishing.
Yeah.
But I think it was the same as NIHL 1, top 4 qualified, didn't they, to really make it the sort of the playoff finals that you deserve. But the whole Jets have had quite a good year there, actually, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. They stepped up from Div 2, which kind of busts my point from earlier about the big jump. But what a lot of people don't know about the Jets is they've got players that have played at a higher level. They've got some lads like Alex Kent, who's on a two-way with the whole Seahawks in the National League. You've got Richard Hager, who is a fantastic player at this level. They've got a good roster, the whole Jets, and deserve where they finish, I think. I think they could have finished a little bit higher. In terms of finishes, Whitley were the surprise to me halfway through the season because they'd had such a up-and-down start. And then towards the end of the season, they brought some experienced players back, some old players back, Dean Holland, people like that, Jordan Barnes. So bolstered, just added to the roster a little bit. And then I think, did they finish 5th, Whitley? Yeah. So the only team out of the top 4 not to make the playoff weekend was the Deeside Dragons. But I think they had probably the toughest game going against Whitley to get there. So
yeah, that 4th and 5th game, the quarterfinal, is always a toss of a coin, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And one exciting thing for me going into particularly the North Finals was that all 4 teams were capable of winning that.
Yeah,
it had the recipe to be such a great playoff weekend, and it was, especially for us. But,
but it's obviously you've got the 9 teams in that league, so you get a few more games than we get in the South. You have 32 normal league games. Is it just the one league cup then that goes with it? And as you say, is there a little local one for the teams that are further northwest?
There's the M56 Cup, which is just between Blackburn Hawks, Deeside Dragons and the Widnes Wild, which was brought about after COVID and the Dragons came back after an extended period out because their rink was used as one of the Nightingale facilities, I believe,
yeah.
during COVID. So they didn't, for that season, that's why we ended up with a lot of Dragons players playing for the Hawks. So there's that local title. We also entered something this year. I don't know if you might have seen it, called the Northern League.
Was that you played Edinburgh? And
yeah, Edinburgh, Capitals, the Kirkcaldy Kestrels, Kilmarnock Thunder. Great little competition.
Yeah. Was there a difference, you think, in the level with the Scottish teams?
I thought they might be going into that, but I think the standard up there is really good. I think the development in Scotland is slightly ahead in places of England ice hockey. One rule in particular, we spoke about it on 4000, I think, is that they allow younger players to play with adult players, you know, to like under 16s can train with adults and play a certain amount of games, I believe. I'm not too sure on the rulings of it, but if you're good enough, you're old enough kind of thing.
Yeah, they've got the Chelmsford rule in England, of course, that prevents under 16s from playing senior hockey. I think when Nicky was on Zero Pucks with me, or I was on 4000 with Nicky, that we kind of said, you know, there should be a bit of an allowance there. If someone, as you say, if they're good enough, they're old enough, mate, like similar to what they did with Connor Bedard in the NHL, you know, they kind of fast-tracked him a little bit.
Definitely.
And the Blackhawks are reaping the benefits of that.
Certainly. What a player he is.
Yeah, I saw a video the other day of him in the warm-ups just zipping one-timers into the top corner, just one after the other.
He's like he's been there for years, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's getting involved as well in all the little chirps, the little digs. I think he's absolutely loving life.
I mean, we've got a young lad that plays for us at the minute, Josh Crawley. He's away with GB under-18s at the minute. What a fantastic player he is. And just going back to the cup final game, not the playoffs, the League Cup, in that first leg when we played Billingham, Josh Crawley scored the first goal. I've been watching hockey at Blackburn probably since like the mid-90s. I have never seen a reaction to a goal like I saw when Josh Crawley scored that goal. He beat Tom Brown near side, up high. He must have absolutely hated that. And I think it rocked him. And I think that's what caused the start of what turned out to be the Adam Barnes show that night. So
your barn in Blackburn is actually quite notorious for atmosphere, isn't it?
Yeah, it's an old facility. It's been there since the night. I think it was 1990 it was built. It's very cold. If you do venture this way, it is very cold. So you might, particularly being southern as well, you might have to wear two coats.
Yeah.
But it's a cold facility, but it's a very intimidating place to play, I can imagine, for the opposition team. The crowds on top of you where they are really. Just at both sides, there's no like seating or anything behind the goals. Behind one of them, there's an upper bar area, but it's a very intimidating place to play, and it gets very loud. Obviously, them sort of steel structured buildings get like that anyway, don't they? With the
it's got a very high ceiling as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful old facility, but it does the job.
It does indeed. Well, I mean, talking of you know, being southern, it's something that I think would be a fantastic thing to do, would be to have the North One and South One playoff winners have a little, almost like a charity shield in football, you know, pre-season, somewhere in the middle, like Coventry or Sheffield, and just have a one-off game. I think that would be fantastic to see. And it would answer a long question, which we're going to get hopefully an answer to in Coventry in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Does hockey belong to the North or does it belong to the South?
That's a very good question. I think with you, like you mentioned in that game there between the Stars and the Red Hawks that's going to happen in Coventry, you could turn it into a day out, couldn't you? You could have the two games. You could have the winners from the playoff games versus, do you know what I mean, against each other.
Yeah.
And then you could have the winners from the league against each other. It might work out differently, obviously, if a team wins both competitions, but then you just have the finalist, I guess, wouldn't you, the other one?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only thing logistically there is you've probably only got a couple of weeks to sort of sort it all out after they've won their title, which like I say, pre-season will probably be a little bit easier to sort of get it organised. But I think that would be great to see. But yeah, that national final that's going to be at Cov in a couple of weeks, obviously Streatham over the last couple of years have been taught a lesson by the Solway Sharks, but they've certainly moved up and done their business in the National this year, just gone.
Yeah.
But how do you see that going then, Red Hawks gets the Stars?
I mean, I don't have a massive knowledge of the South. I mean, to be fair, you're my knowledge base when it comes to South One, listening to your podcast. Obviously, I know Nicky, and he tells me a lot about it, and his brother's a very good player. There's an ex-Blackburn Hawks player, plays for the Red Hawks, Luke Brittle.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great, had a good player. Season. Really good season.
Comes from a great hockey family, to be honest. His brother, Adam, and Danny played for us at the same time, the three of them. And there's a fourth brother, Stuart, who played at Sheffield. So it was a bit frustrating that we couldn't get all four Brittles. We only got three quarters of it. But it's going to be a tough one. Billingham, like I said earlier, they're a great side. With the form they're on currently, I can see the Red Hawks winning. I can see that. It's hard as well because there's such a bit of a rivalry between the Hawks and the Stars, but then there's also that rivalry between the North and the South as well. So, like, it's hurting me sitting on this fence right now. It's hard to... But I think the Red Hawks will do it, I think, if I'm being honest. But I think it's going to be a great game and a great advert for hockey at our level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what I've said to Panks, is just, you know, go and show the rest of the country how good this league is down here. Because we're very proud of it as fans of it. It's been a fantastic competition this year. And as when I had Lewis Clifford, the Chancellor Chieftains coach, on here, he said, Streatham are the best team until they're not. And this year they were outthought in the playoff semi-final against Solent, who had a play for everything that Streatham could throw at them.
Yeah.
Which I think mentally tired them for the final against Chelmsford. But I think Paints' big job is going to be getting his boys back all up for they're certainly going to be up for it, but psychologically just forgetting that Solent defeat and getting out there. And of course, the difficult thing is when you're playing a team that's not even in your league, it's very hard to see game tape and know what you're actually coming up against.
Yeah. Like you say, it would be interesting to see more teams from the North and the South play each other regularly, even if it's worth some kind of like crossover cup or something like that throughout the season as well. I'd like to see more South hockey. I think hockey at our level, not to get too political, we're essentially the third tier of British ice hockey, and sometimes it gets kind of looked upon in that way as well. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. I don't think it gets the respect it deserves sometimes. Yeah. Because these guys are putting as much time in as the guys in the level above. I mean, certainly not the travelling. That's why we're confident. Because, you know, we only have to travel throughout the South or throughout the North rather than the guys from Bromford Raiders heading up to Solway for a weekend.
Yeah.
But it's...
The question gets asked a lot about Blackburn more of recent times. Would they make the step up to the National? I'm really on the fence with it, to be honest, because as much as I'd like to play the likes of Leeds and teams like that, and Solway again, and the Wildcats and Lightning, obviously, but I'm happy with where we're at, because for value for money as a supporter, the standard's improving all the time. Yeah. You made a good point earlier about players making the step down, because at the end of the day, no one's making a living from hockey in this country. Well, not a lot of people.
No.
Kieran Brown, maybe. But, there's not a lot of people that make a living from it. You've got wives, you've got kids. Like, you've got bills to pay. And I think hockey at our level, it ticks a few boxes. It's a good standard. It is a good standard, I think it is. And it's a good sort of, like, work-life hockey balance as well, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't always have the two-game weekends. So you're probably training somewhere between once and twice a week, not normally three at our level. So, yeah, as you say, they can get the balance, and it keeps the value for money. I mean, when we've spoken before, people have said about Streatham Red Hawks making the jump to the National because they dominated the South One for so long. It's trying to explain to them. And I was in that camp as well. When they kept winning everything, I was like, come on, go up, have a challenge. Yeah. But... Len, looking at it, that's going to cost them in excess of £250,000 a year to do that. They'll lose all the players they've got now because they're there for the reason they can't commit to the travelling around in the National. They'll have to house imports in Southwest London. God knows how much that will cost.
Yeah, it's literally like that. And it's just throwing money away. But, you know, we could be seeing a turning point in South Wales. Streatham obviously have not won the playoffs for the first time in a few years now. They've won everything else this year, to be fair. They've got an incredible roster, and they play incredibly fast and strong hockey. But it's, I think, across the country, I think it's a very, very competitive standard. And as you say, I would love to see a little bit more of a crossover.
Yeah, we did a thing a few years ago. I mean, a few years ago, I think it was like 2015, 2016. I could be wrong on the year. Someone will at me in the comments, I'm sure. But we had a sort of a crossover cup between the then EPL and some of teams from our league. Some of it was good at first, but then like there's that jumping standard. So there was like some rugby scores, which isn't nice. And I suppose whichever end you're on, it's not nice to watch. No one likes watching someone completely get destroyed. It's not fun to watch. And I think being at the same level that we are, I think it would make for an exciting competition. Because that Northern League for us has been a great addition this year. Has it hindered our chances of winning the league? That's another question for us, for the Hawks in particular. I can't decide whether it has or it hasn't, to be honest. I think being game ready all the time is a good thing, but then if you're playing back-to-back games every weekend, it does take a toll. And we predominantly play most of our home games on a Sunday, so if you're travelling back from Fife in Kirkcaldy on a Saturday night and then playing again on a Sunday, it's going to have an effect on you. So it's one of them, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose it'll be, time will tell whether they play in it next year or not, as to whether they have a better challenge at the title.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think we can take it next year, if I'm being honest. I think we can do it.
Yeah, well, as you say, it's such a competitive league, and now with Solway taking that step to the national, it's really opened it up. I was expecting more from the Witness Wild this year, so I would imagine that they'll have another sort of stab at it next year. But obviously, we're just now looking forward to a couple of weeks at Coventry, where we'll see the Billingham Stars take on the Streatham Red Hawks, and we'll find out for now whether hockey belongs to the North or the South.
We will indeed.
Graham Hamilton, thank you so much for joining me on Zero Pucks, mate. When I first started, you were the first person that sent me a message, reached out and sort of asked me what it was I was up to, if I needed any help. And we've been conversing sort of ever since, as I'm coming up towards the 2-year anniversary of doing this. So, yeah, thank you very much for that, mate.
Congratulations, mate, on everything you've achieved. It's been nice to watch your sort of journey throughout this hockey podcasting world. I work in radio, so I always lend a hand if I can to different hockey podcasters and things like that. So,
yeah, excellent. Well, obviously continue your good work with Hawks Talk on the comms, and of course producing with our friends at 4000 and Counting. And because you've got a busy little period coming up soon, of course, with the Elite League playoffs, live podcasts and whatnot.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, should be good fun.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, mate.
Cheers, Paul. Thank you.
And as we leave the North, thank you so much to Graham Hamilton for coming to join me to talk about the Morley Division and the winners there. He was obviously as happy as I was with his team winning the playoffs. We're going to go south, and we're going to go with the gentleman that during the playoff weekend was stood by my side the entire time. He was my emotional support all the way through. Chris Beale, how you doing, fella?
All right, mate. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I've just about recovered physically. Mentally, I don't think I ever will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how many fans get to say they called their team's playoff victory?
Just me and you, I think.
Yeah, just me and you at them.
Yeah, of course, you from Milton Keynes last year. You had that privilege which you pointed out at the end of the game there. But we are going to discuss this evening the rest of the Britain division, sort of right the way through the clubs. Obviously, there was a few games that ended up not being played because of ice time. But we're going to have a little look at every single club. Not massively in depth, because we don't want to be doing a big old 2-hour episode to finish the season off.
No.
We'll have a little look, see where we think they can improve, what we think they've done well. And then obviously when we get to the top two that took home all the silverware, and then there's still a little bit of silverware available, we'll have a little discussion of that as well. So we'll start at the bottom and work our way up with the Milton Keynes Thunder. Was it much what you expected?
Based on I thought at the start of the season Thunder were doing much better than, obviously, like, because I feel like Thunder's first game of the season was against us. Yeah. So it was bookended against us thumping them 15-0 and the infamous 22-0 wins. And then you've got this, they came in and they only lost 9-0 to us. And I think they had both the Hamill brothers, they had all these guys that had come down from the Lightning. And then as the season's gone on, those guys kind of were recalled by the Lightning. And I think it left Thunder with a little bit of threadbare in terms of what they could bring to the table to challenge everybody. So
with numbers really as well as ability level, they were low on numbers a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the results they have this year, they only won 2 games overall in the course of the season. And looking at the stats, Mark Austin was their highest scorer with, I think, 5 goals.
Yeah.
So I think, but as talking to Lauren Cox, who heads up the Thunder over the playoff weekend, because Lauren and Tim were our camera op and producer for our webcast. Lauren is very, very hopeful for the future with the incoming new coach, and potentially new coach, new ethos, new recruitment policy, new contacts could see the club bring in some fresher players who, said to me at one point, they've got a couple of guys coming in who could really be a good pairing for them. It's just a case of, I think they need to steer a little bit away maybe from this commitment to the under 18s and under 20s development and try and get more experienced players in there.
Mm. Yeah, the two wins that they did have, I think it was Cameron Hamill really was crucial in both of those wins. They beat Romford Buccaneers early in the season. I think it was 5-3. And then they had a fantastic 7-3 victory, I think, at the Oxford City Stars, which ended up forcing apologies from the Oxford City Stars ranks, as it was such a poor performance.
Well,
but
I remember Oxford posting a rather unfortunate Instagram post on the day before the game where they said, where it was versus NK Thunder, a win for Oxford, ? And boy, I was like, if the hockey gods are real, they are going to punish you for that one. And boy, did they.
But I think they certainly enjoyed those two wins.
Yeah.
And as we don't know for sure as yet, that we may well have two extra teams, at the very least, joining the Britain Division next year. So, wooden spoon-wise, there will be a fight on to avoid that. And I think, as you say, with what Lauren was telling us, they're excited with what Will's going to be bringing in the new season. We hopefully will be hearing from Will throughout the season next year on ZPG. And, yeah, I think they can keep that young core together, and then, as you say, add some experience. I think they could turn some heads.
Yeah, because I remember Thunder teams of a few seasons back, they had that mixture of like raw young talent mixed with experienced guys like Tom Carlon. I was going to say Tom Avery. I'm still back in Ali Pally. they had Tom Carlon, they had Grant McPherson, they had a couple of Jamie Lyne. They had a few. Got Tom Annette's as well in there, and then it's just that experience has kind of slowly left the roster, and they've been left with these players who they play so hard. It's at times it's like, you know, you'd think as a Stratton fan, I'd be sat there in the stands whooping and yelling that, like, yeah, we just put 10 past them. And like after 5, I'm normally a bit 5 against them. I'm normally a bit like, I'm like that meme from The Simpsons of stop, stop, he's already dead. they try every single shift. It's not like they give up. It's just, I think they need some players with a bit more experience on that roster.
Yeah, they do work very hard. I mean, looking down their results there, their worst pumpings really came at Chelmsford, a 17-2 and a 12-1. 5-2 at home both times to Chelmsford, actually. So at home, they kept it a little tighter. But, yes, I think Solon put 12 past them. Romford put 12 past them. Streatham was, obviously, as we know, put 9 and 14 past them.
Yeah.
So it's amazingly, the netty at Milton Keynes did not have the most shots at him this year. It was Owen Ryder. I think that tells you how clinical everyone is.
Thing is as well, like Bradfield and Norton neither of them have looked like bad netminders.
No,
they,
no,
for the players. Number they shipped, they really actually put in like such amazing performances that the if you just go on the stats and goals against and got, you know, save percentages alone, it doesn't tell the true story of how hard those two goalies work for them and how good they are, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. But yeah, they finished, didn't play all their 28 games. They got a couple put down as ties. So two wins, 24 defeats, two ties, 6 points. They did ship 222 goals in the season, which is quite high, scoring 37. But just above them then in seventh, a team that I don't think anyone saw finishing this low down in the league at the start. I certainly didn't. Oxford City Stars in seventh. It's just gone from bad to worse, isn't it, through the year four?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is they're actually still where they were last season in terms of league position. They finished seventh last year.
Yeah.
I mean, off the ice, Oxford are a class act. They're like one of the best run teams in the division, in my opinion. The social media output, the reaction to the Adam Johnson situation, that they were one of the first teams to immediately implement mandatory net guards, the press they got out of that, absolutely brilliant. But on the ice, there's been a real set of problems there. They've had a turbulent season where they've seen one coach leave and then a temporary coach come in who then has become the permanent coach. They've seen player turnover, I think, almost every month. I think both of their imports by the end of the season had left. I mean, they had one import who, Dylan Hullaby, he's their top scorer for the season, and he only had 20 points.
Mm.
And that's a player who had a pedigree, in my opinion. If you look at other players who've had similar, he had NCAA Division III and SPHL and various other Canadian junior division experience. If you look at that experience matched up against other players, both in the league above, in the National League and this league, who've had similar, I mean, I think Alex Roberts, for example, he played NCAA 3, and he was able to take NIHL 1 when it was the crossover with the national division teams. He was able to score quite freely at that level and has gone on to play national, obviously, with Bromford for a season and with Basingstoke as well. And then you've got Dylan Hullaby, who I think part of it's down to the service he was getting, whoever was feeding him the puck. Wasn't really getting him into a position to score. Because it's shown, because at the other end of the ice, they've got one of the best netminders in the league, in my opinion, in Ross Miller.
Yeah, great year he had.
Yeah. He had another good year. And then they've also had the PR boom of having Peter Cech in net, which is, I think he's the only netminder I think I've ever heard of in British hockey where the team has to put out a press release to say Peter Cech will be playing in net to, you know, try and boost the attendance a little bit.
Yeah. They broke their own pre-sale records this year, which is fantastic to see. And their average attendance over the last 3 years has just grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. And as you say, off the ice, that club is a juggernaut. It's in virtually in the middle of the country, in a university city. There's so much stuff that they're taking advantage of in the correct way, but unfortunately this year on the ice, it just hasn't clicked. I spoke with Dylan shortly after he arrived home, and he said, the experience hasn't put him off playing in this country again, but certainly wouldn't be back at Oxford.
I mean, I wouldn't mind having him in a Streatham shirt. I'm just going to say that now. So, Dylan, if you're listening, I can point you in the direction of the people who can make that happen.
Yeah. Come and see how you like Southwest London.
It's incredible that off the ice that they've broken that record, because normally when a club is losing as many games as we saw Oxford lose this year, you wouldn't expect the attendances to go up and up and up, but it speaks volumes of that social media output that they've been doing, the work it obviously has been doing for them to get local fans interested and local people interested. So, and even if it's just people who are like, oh, I want to turn up and just see Peter Cech playing hockey instead of football, or, you know, Arsenal and Chelsea fans who are just curious to see Peter Cech play ice hockey instead of football, and then they're hooked. They stay. So it's worked out really well in terms of a PR thing for them. It's just going forward next season, they've got to find a way to recruit players to put out on that ice that enables them to give that record sellout crowd, those record sellout crowds, something to really cheer for. I mean, their fans are committed and they're so behind that team,
yeah.
But they deserve something at this point to really be able to celebrate.
But I
think part of the problem is, and it's a problem for every team at this level of British hockey, which is you are so limited by where you are geographically, and you are so limited in what the other teams around you don't end up signing or don't get before you. And the majority of their catchment area is going to be players from Swindon, players from Bristol, a bit further afield, players from Cardiff, maybe a little bit further afield down on the south coast, the Basingstoke and Solent area.
Mm.
And it's finding players out of that that it can add to the core. Because you don't want to, as much as they haven't had a good season, you don't want to take the core and burn it down, because that would put all of this back to completely to square one.
Yeah, which I don't think is where they really want to go. I mean, that was something that we'll get onto Chelmsford a little later, that Lewis Clifford could have had, where he could have completely ripped that roster to shreds and started from the beginning, but he kept that core and built around it. So I think that's something that Shannon's going to look at doing next year. His lad's been terrific since he's come in towards the end of the year, Ethan Taylor.
Yeah.
He's had a really, really good little jump for them. But yeah, to play 28 games and lose 20 of them, and then two further games in overtime is, like you say, the fact that they kept people coming in is just a testament to how they ran their social media. I think the guy that runs it told me they had over 1 million social media hits this year, which is astonishing. And I wonder where the Peter Cech train is going to roll onto next year, whether it stays in Chelmsford or he carries on his little tour.
Well, hopefully for them, I think he'd stay in Oxford, because I think he's enjoyed his time there and I think he likes it there.
Mm.
So hopefully for them, he stays there, because if they're going to continue to build off of this, they definitely need him to stay. And the thing is he's proven himself. That, I mean, he managed to keep us from getting a win down there. And if you can stop us with the monstrous offense, we've been more of a monstrous defense this year. But if you can stop the offense that we have, you're definitely a decent caliber netminder at this level.
Mm. And that's without doubt the highlight of their season, I think, isn't it? That 3-2 win against the Streatham Redhawks is without doubt the highlight of their season.
Yeah, that was one of our the panic moments in Southwest London. I think do we need to alter here to change this? But I mean, at the same time, I missed that game. I wasn't at that game, but from what I've read, we threw the kitchen sink at the guy and he just stopped everything but two goals.
Yeah, no, I think to be fair, I mean, as I think every team in the league, probably possibly aside from MK, has that one game against a Streatham or a Chelmsford or a Slough where they give them a scare or they pull their pants down a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're on to us a little bit early, but like, we are the scalp at the moment.
Everybody
wants it. Every time anybody beats us, everybody in the league, regardless of allegiance, has a celebration.
I mean, it doesn't just sort of go to you, actually, funnily enough, because it was the other day, it was exactly a year since the playoff finals in MK last year. And I had the video of Solent scoring their equalising goal in the semi-final against Invicta. And everybody was cheering, apart from the Invicta fans. So everyone had picked Solent for that weekend, I think.
Yeah, well, probably apart from... Well, I don't know about our lot, because the problem is our lot, we don't like Invicta, we don't like Solent, we don't like Chelmsford. So it's like any one of those choices is like swallowing fire for my fan base.
I think it's Streatham and Chelmsford are probably in the same boat, where they're like Millwall, where everyone hates them, they don't care. But yeah, Oxford finishing, say, 7th place, 28 games, 5 wins, 20 losses, 2 OT losses, and a tie in there. There was a game against MK that they couldn't get played, so that ended up being given a 0-0. Only scored 67 goals, which, I mean, that's not even 3 a game on averages.
Yeah, I mean, looking. I mean, I'm looking at the you know, Joe Scott is NHL stats.wordpress.com.
As am
there
I.
You, there
as
you
am
go,
I.
Joe. There you go, Joe. Just got that in there for you.
We're not worthy, Joe.
Yeah. Like looking at that, it's like Matt Lauda is their next leading point scorer, and he's only got 10 goals. And there wasn't anybody. Well, and Bailey Hainpitcher is the only other player to breach double figures for them in terms of goal scoring for the entire season.
That was a strange release for me, actually, when he went. I'm assuming that was probably more on his part and something logistical for him.
I believe so. It's like I said, it can be anything with these releases. It can be, you know, dynamic in the room, new coach coming in. But I'm not sure. I forget where Bailey ended up. Actually,
he's at Cardiff Fire in the
NHL. So that's probably a logistical thing on his end. I think it was the same for, like, they brought in James Pentecost, and I think it was the same for James. The travel was proving a bit of an issue for him, so he decided to return home to Oxford. And then, I mean, if they'd had James for the entire season, I mean, he only played 3 league games for them, but he had 3 games, 2 goals, 2 assists, 4 points. That tracks that if he kept up that form over the course of 28 games, we might have been looking at them for maybe 4 people who managed to breach the double-figure mark.
Yeah, absolutely. From what I understand, he won't be staying there next year. He's off elsewhere.
Ooh.
But,
The rumour mill begins.
The rumour mill is true, but I'm not laying any other rumours. You know, nothing comes out till August time. I'm stum. but we move then up to sixth place and the Romford Buccaneers, who, I mean, considering they only got 9 wins, which everyone's been speaking about this team this year, just because of the young players that they've got. And they're a bloody good team to watch.
From my perspective, they're a nightmare to watch just because the way they play, we really struggled to break them down this year. We always seem to have, even though we've got those 2 games in the playoff quarterfinals, we've played them 2 years in a row where we got one over on them fairly easily with the 5-1 and the 6-1. League games against them always seem to be these, really tough games where we just couldn't break them down. And I think Ben put it to me best is that they're a young team, that they don't play with too much structure like other teams do. They tend to let the young guys who know how to move the puck and use their feet, like Brindley Capps, do all the damage and then kind of like swoop in for the rebounds and the counterattacks. And they are really fun to watch at the same time, and they're in a weird place because obviously their main objective is to produce talent to send to the Raiders.
Yeah,
and they do a great job of that. You know, Brindley Capps scored his first professional level, like National League goal this year. You've got the Pascali brothers who've been up there playing with them. You've got obviously TJ Anderson who has dipped in a bit back to NIHL 1 this year to help them out when they needed a bit more, you know.
But he made sure that he was eligible for playoffs.
Oh yeah, obviously. and obviously Joe Tomalin, and they've got these great guys that I feel like if they could, and they've got some good experience as well, in the likes of, you know, Tom Wilson and Donald Campbell on there, and obviously one of the best net minders in the league in Sonny Phillips in there. I mean, their young netminders are getting a hell of an education from you know, learning from and working with someone like Sonny.
Yeah. I think they have the only GB international player at this level as well.
Do they? Oh, yes, Ellie Wakeling. Yes. Of course.
The trick question.
they're another team that have basically stayed where they were about in the league position last year, but
yeah.
I really think if they could keep hold of that group of, and also special, I have to mention also Ewan Hill, who came in for them after not really having a great start for the season with us and being let go. He really like came alight when he moved over there, you know, ending the season with 17 goals, 24 assists,
yeah,
for 41 points. But, you know, these 26 points behind Brindley Capps in the point standings, that's That's how good Brindley Caps is at this level. And this is the problem. Brindley Caps is that good that I would not expect him to be staying at this level last year, and it's the same problem that the Raiders had a few seasons ago when they lost Tommy Huggett. So they have to hope that they can cling on to these amazing youngsters and try and add some extra depth and experience behind them, because if they could do that, I think that they become better than a sixth place team. But I think the only thing that really hamstrings them at the moment is the fact that they lose players to call-ups when they really need them at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's almost selfish of us to want to keep Brindley Caps in this league, because I think he can go all the way in this country, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
And we would all love to see it. Absolutely everyone would love to see it, because that boy is an absolute privilege to watch.
Yeah.
Everything about the way he plays is just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I remember he got a breakaway during one game in Streatham earlier this year, and knowing it was, when I realised it was Brindley Caps, I just immediately had the goal gif loaded, because I knew, as much faith as I have in Danny Milton, I was like, no, this is going in, it's Brindley Caps.
Mm. And he did tell me, Brindley, actually, that Danny was the goalkeeper he wanted to score on the most.
Yeah.
And then he did manage to get it done. I mean, their standout results was they pushed you guys pretty hard at the high road to a 7-5 game.
They just seem to be our near banana team this year, because I think we won all the games against them, but the early season one, I think, where we only won 4-1, I think, in their barn. The one I travelled to, I did go up to at least one of the games in Romford, and that one, I think we won 6-3, but they put us behind early on in that game, and they came back at us fairly hard as the rest of the game went on. Which you love to see from a team of youngsters.
I mean, I think for them, they took a great OT win at Invicta late in the season. That was again, Brindley Caps was just astonishing in that game. But at the start of the season, they beat Chelmsford 6-2 at the Riverside. Brindley Caps scored a hat trick, and that was like, "Hello, I'm here. This is what I'm all about."
Yeah, they do tend to be just everybody. It's not just us. They seem to be everybody's banana skin.
Mm.
I mean, Slough almost slipped on that. I wondered, were we going to see Romford make the playoff weekend for the third year in a row? Because the last two seasons, they did it by beating Solent as well. Slough.
Certainly was the season before. Yeah. The season before that, I don't think it was, because
it wouldn't have
beat Slough. Yeah. I think it was.
Well, it must have been Solent the year before, and it would have been Solent last year, because we played Solent in the final last year. They have this amazing ability to just pull results out of nowhere, and I sometimes wonder whether it's their opposition underestimating them.
I think that could possibly be the case. I think I think Jason Buckman's got such a good balance there. Of, you know, he knows that he's not going to be able to have Brindley and Joe and TJ and Luca and that available all the time.
Yeah.
So he plans around that. And when he hasn't got them, he's got a different plan.
Yeah.
And then they're still a difficult obstacle to beat. But then when he has got them, it keeps them difficult. And as you said earlier, not with any structure, lets the flair players go and do their flair thing.
Yeah. They've all got the knowledge that they've got, as I said, you know, Sonny Phillips, one of the best netminders at this level, backstopping them at the back end.
Mm.
That's going to give your forwards so much confidence to go push forward and try different things, knowing that if things go awry on this push, that there's a guy at the back end who can stop things.
They certainly do make it entertaining. And I say, I would imagine we might see a little bit of Brindley Caps and Joe Tomlin next year, but I don't think we'll see a great deal of them.
I think this year, this is the hell of a thing. Like, TJ Anderson, I swear, every time I saw him play us, he always scored on us. I think he scored on us in both playoff games that we played against them in MK over the 2 years, and he's a I know we could never land him, but he's always like the one of the players on that Romford roster. I'm like, if I could sign that guy, I'd sign him tomorrow, because he's so incredible to watch, just the bursts of speed that he makes. And then I think it was like I saw him play in MK, and then a week later I saw him play in Coventry a year later, and he did, I think he scored in that game and didn't look miles out of place at all.
Yeah, no, I think they certainly do breed him well, Dan Romford.
Yeah, yeah, they just have, it's interesting that, I mean, obviously with the news that we've got the Cardiff team that wants to try and come into NHL One next year, and Swindon wanting to put their own junior team into here. So we've got this collection of top of the junior development pole clubs that want to come into NHL One. And it's interesting to see the difference in terms of how, like, Romford just seems to have a factory that outputs incredibly talented players. And it's, you know, what's going on there that's different to, say, what other teams' junior systems are producing?
Yeah, because they're all, yeah. I just say, and it's not like it's with some of the things in our league where they've got an NIHL 2 side and you might be looking at bumping a couple up. They're sending guys from this level into the National League.
Yeah.
And in some cases, you know, beyond, we've said Brindley could definitely do it. I'd fancy TJ Anderson to have a good little spell if he got a little dig at elite as well.
Definitely. Again, he's a cut above the rest. I think he can only get better with more and more experience at the National League level.
Yeah, which is exactly what we need for our homegrown players. But, I mean, interesting there. We'll move up now to fifth place. But there's quite a gap. I'm just going to have a little cough.
It's all right. I'll just refamiliarise myself with the league table.
Because like last year, we were saying, obviously, Oxford finished the same place as this year, seventh. But they were like 2 points off fourth because it was so incredibly tight. Whereas this year, there was a little bit of a gap from Romford in sixth, 1-9, lost 16, 3-OT losses, 21 points, up to Invicta in fifth place on 33 points. So that top five had really spread. They've got themselves away from the bottom three. But Invicta themselves, another team. I think I predicted in pre-season that Invicta would finish second.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the conversation we had at the playoff weekend when we were off the air, you and I, which is, what did we think of Invicta this year? And I had them, I thought, with the guys they brought in, with Ollie Bronyman, with Madstoon, you add that to, and Tom Saw, and then you add that to Stan Laszczyk, I was like, that's a very, and Dan Scott on the back end, I was like, that is a very, very dangerous group. I know, obviously, at that point, it was like Ollie Bronyman had been out of hockey for several years, the same with Madstoon. I was like, Tom Saw didn't have the best time playing for us, but he showed back up in the north what he's capable of. And I thought if he comes back to South One as South One is now, because obviously when he was with us, it was during that national, you know, the national crossover. And I feel like that was a tougher league for him to play in than, you know, South One. It's tougher to go up against National League roster teams. I thought he's going to boss this league, or at least be a real big threat. And, you know, I was proven right. Like, Stan Laszczyk, obviously top scorer for them with 66 points this year, but Tom Saw was right behind him. The surprise, although I think being on that top line with them, obviously, was Ruskin Springer Hughes. He was another, you know, but they had Owen Dell return to the fold as well. And then when you add in Tommy Huggett, it all had these elements of this is a really, really concerning, from my perspective as a fan of the team sitting atop the mountain, this is concerning. Like, this may actually be a contender to topple us. And then they came into our barn, won 4-2 on the opening night of preseason. And again, and I was like, okay, maybe I am right to be concerned. And then a few weeks later, they obviously came in and it was a very famous 3-0 win by them on our own ice.
Yeah.
Which, that precipitate. I know that precipitated and led to the discussions about changes we needed to make in the roster. And it had a lot of us up in the stands, obviously, you know, wondering, is this it? Is our time over? Have we, finally been, it was last year, the last trophy party. And then for some reason, Invicta have kind of fallen away over the course of the second half of the season. And I'm not sure how to explain how that happened.
I think it was a numbers issue.
Yeah.
They had a lot of injuries. They had a few players that were actually, when they signed at the start of the year, had already said, look, I can't play every game.
Yeah.
The likes of Richard Harris, the guy's just a beast. He plays anywhere on the ice. He's so quick. He's so strong. He's almost like having two players on there at the same time.
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, but I think then when they started getting these injuries as well, people got, obviously, yeah. Tommy Huggett, I think, was struggling with getting over the Dartford crossing three times a week, ended up at Chelmsford. And, yeah, I think the numbers, they dwindled to the level that Carl Lennon was icing quite regularly.
Yeah, it's always the thing in British hockey. Anyone who says they're retired in British hockey is never actually truly retired.
Until you no longer own skates, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Until your missus has hidden all your kit.
And I was certainly guilty of chirping Carl when he was at the Riverside and shouting that he was far too old to be out there. But
yeah.
That's all in good. It's all in good heart.
Yeah. I mean, we obviously contributed with the unfortunate incident in that game, that cup game. Like, we contributed with some suspensions as well that we ended up giving them, because obviously that was a couple of weeks before the cup semi-final, where, to be fair, again, that the home leg, because I went to the home leg and they put in an incredible performance as a team. To hold, I think we went 1-0 up, they pulled it back 1-1, we then went 2-1 up, and they again fought back and pulled it back to 2-2. Was it? No.
Was it 4-2 it finished in the end?
Well, yeah, the first leg ended with us. Oh, no, wait, we went 3-2 up. Sorry.
Yeah. And then it ended after the first period, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, I meant the cup semi final. A couple of weeks later, which was we won that first leg 3-2, and then headed into obviously our own barn with up 3-2 and 1-4-2. But they never gave up. They really put in a strong performance, and I couldn't understand how that has led to them being down in fifth, and how they were a team that was 1 minute or so away from the playoff final a season ago. And had won the Challenge Cup the year before, and how they had seemed to they were making all this progress, and then the progress has kind of stalled a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, I think they were looking at more. They've certainly brought a few of the Mustangs through. We've seen the likes of Dan Alabaster making his first appearances, Matt Ferris as well coming up through. From the Mustangs to play with there. I think that's something that Carl Lennon and Kevin Parrish really want to do, is sort of bring the youth through. But yeah, it was just a bit of a strange one, really. I don't think anyone could probably put their finger on it. Every coach will say, if you could bottle consistency, you'd be an absolute millionaire.
Yeah. I mean, it's through no fault of their own. Obviously, like, the consistency thing is a problem that a lot of teams at this level have an issue with, because all the players have lives outside hockey. Sometimes you just can't help that you can't make a particular game because of whatever reason, work, family matters. You've got a family vacation that you promised to take your wife or girlfriend on. that is one of, I think, back to the Mustangs. That and their academy system is definitely something that Invicta can really exploit to improve. is the fact that they can add that extra depth from those guys on the Mustangs, because that's a Mustangs team that has a winning pedigree. It didn't win anything. This year, but it pulled off that amazing win in that playoff final against the Huskies on home ice a season ago.
Yeah.
So those are players that know how to win. And I, Carl Lennon, and then as his interview said, we've identified to fix them, and I have no doubt that he will be working on a way, and probably will find a way to improve things and solidify things, and hopefully get them back up to where they were last season, and in cup contention and playoff final contention again.
Yeah, I certainly think, like you say, that they've got the foundations are all there, and I think they've got the right people in charge in the right places, and I think next year that they'll be back. So they're finishing fifth, with 15 wins, 10 losses, 3 OT losses, 132 goals though. Did score a lot, conceded 105, 33 points. So just above them, then we get to the top four, who all qualified for the playoffs this year, and we start first with the Solent Devils, then finishing in fourth. Again, slightly lower for them this year. They have finished second the last couple of years, but I think again they were having numbers issues with keeping consistent roster together for week after week. Certainly, what I was told sort of pre-match in the playoffs from Alex Murray and from Captain Alex Cole as well, is that trying to keep the same guys, the same 16, 18 guys week in, week out, was a real struggle for them. And they had some really good results this year, but they did have a couple of duffers as well.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, every time I speak to Joe, he's always telling me that there's somebody on the roster who's suffered an injury of some kind. They do struggle to keep them off the injured list there. And I mean, obviously this year they lost a talismanic netminder in Chico Cole, who was a player who stole them so many games over the last few seasons, and was a big reason behind why they were finishing second behind us and fighting with us every step of the way. And I mean, as I said on the commentary, there was that one game of the season where Chico would stand on his head and just stop everything that we threw at them. And going into this season, you obviously had the question of, could Aaron Taylor or Mark Duffy fill that position? And I think Aaron Taylor has done a brilliant job of filling in. Obviously, he's ended the season with a 0.912, 3.32 goals against average. Put the wall up against us. I love how Alex Murray, echoed what I said in his interview with you, where he said, we have that one game every year against Streatham. We've lost all the others, so yeah, this must be that one game. But they've still got a very skilled roster. Obviously, this year they've again lost two other players. Now they've lost Scott Cooper, and they've lost Drew Campbell, as we said on the air, the oldest player in the NIHL setup at 47 years old. That's an incredible amount of leadership and experience that you're losing from your locker room.
Good youth in there, though. They have got a good group of youth.
Yes,
Liam Coleman's been a fantastic signing for them. Kane Russell has had a brilliant year, playoffs included. So that semi-final of the playoffs, he was outstanding. And I just think they do...
He says through gritted teeth.
But yeah, they do... I can sense frustration with Muzza. The whole always the bridesmaid, never the bride type thing. They've been going close for the last few years. I don't think they've won a trophy, really. I think it's 2018 or 17. Which was against Chelmsford in the old South 2.
It was at the old... I think that was at the John Knight Leisure Centre, if I recall correctly.
I think it was, yeah.
And yeah.
And then obviously a couple of years later, they played again and it was reversed and Chelmsford managed to win. So yeah, since that, it's a long time to go for, without a trophy for a team that not only are a successful team, but as we were saying off air, as I've said to Muzzo to his face, they should never lose a home game with that barn.
Yeah, I love the way Anthony Russell always describes it. It's like playing hockey inside a paddling pool inside of a phone box.
Mm.
And speaking as somebody who many, many years ago played a game on that rink, it is exactly like that. I've never known a rink where you have to be so sharp on your line changes.
Yeah, you get a lot of too many men bench penalties down there.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to and icing as well. Like, you have to be so careful when you wing the puck around the back end boards, because if the guy at the blue line misses it, you're
coming all the way back.
You're coming all the way back.
Yeah.
But I mean, they have a really, they've got great young elements there in that roster. I said this on the MK commentary last year, which is, Alex Murray must wonder, what do I have to do? Because there's a window. Every team knows when they have a roster that's as good as this, and was as good as it was last year, knows that they have a window on how long they can try and use that roster to try and win a trophy or win trophies. And for Alex Murray, the unfortunate fact was that at the same time that he was assembling this roster, somebody else in our case, Michael Farn, Adam Carr, Ben Painter, were all assembling rosters that were, you know, had that edge that made them, put them over the top and made them league champions. And, you know, it really does seem like you must feel like, what do I have to do? Who do I have to sign? And, you know, the problem he has to solve big time is that geography problem. It's convincing those players that will put them over the top to come and play in Solent. And it's convincing that guy, come and play for us and endure the 3 or 4 hour car ride that gets you home at 2 o'clock in the morning on a training night.
But no, I think he's obviously done very well. When he was on here, I called him Mr. Solent. I think that's very accurate of Alex Murray. Yeah. I think he makes it an inviting place to play. I think the guys that play there do enjoy playing there, but they must do, because them guys walk through brick walls for Alex Murray on the ice, which is brilliant to see. But unfortunately for them, obviously this year, they made the playoff final for the second year in a row. And for the second year in a row, they just did not turn up for the first 60 seconds, and by then it was over.
Yeah, I think they have the same problem that they had last year against us, which was, last year when they came in against us, they had, you know, the craziness that was always the second game at MK that weekend, which was, you know, it was almost Joe and I put the jinx on it and said, it's over, it's done, and then Murray magic struck in the final minute of the game and it went to overtime. And sorry, mate, you're muted.
Oh, yeah, six forwards, empty net. It's craziness.
Yeah, and then we said on the air, he won't do it again. The definition of madness is he's doing it again. but I think that, you know, they had a really tough game against us, because we play a very physical game, and that's going to take it out of you. And we threw everything we could at them to try and get that equaliser. And they really had to play to hang on. And they did. But I think it took a lot out of them. And sometimes as well, you just come up against a team that's just on that roll. And obviously everybody said Chelmsford were the best team in the league form-wise going into that weekend. And it showed, unfortunately. And it showed, unfortunately, for Alex Murray. And it again, is just a case of, you've built this roster that got you this far, but at the other end of the ice was Lewis Clifford, who had built a roster as well that had gotten that far. And Lewis Clifford had built the roster that on the day had whatever it was it took to win.
Yeah, I think watching Mother's post-game thoughts on the Solent Devils media channels, they kind of get him right after the game. And it's not that his answers or his explanations are robotic or anything like that. He's very, very good at doing this media side of it. Generally, when I get it from him, it's sunk in over 24 hours or maybe even longer. And I feel like I get a slightly different response from him. But it was, yeah, as I said, it was the frustration and the disappointment that they've got that far and just could not do the final hurdle that I think will sit with him all summer. And the cogs will be turning in his mind. And I think they'll be back out again as one of the most difficult sides to beat in the league next year.
Oh, yeah, by a mile. They, like you said, I've been to games in that rink. And even though I think we came away with the win, they're incredibly difficult to play against in their own barn. Like you said, I agree that they need to find a way to make it so that place is a fortress when they come away with a 99.9% home record.
Mm.
But sorry, my throat's clogging up a bit. I just need water.
I'll tell you, the best thing about going down there, I went down there a couple of times this year, was the first time I went down there with the Chieftains was seeing Damon Porter's face when he arrived in that rink. You do not get rinks like that in Calgary or Arizona.
No. No, you really don't. I mean, I remember my reaction when I saw it was going from the heights of the Sky Dome, and ultimately, everybody's rink is special to them, I'm going to keep repeating that point, but Solent need to find a way to make that uniqueness of their rink a way to make it a fortress, so that they're, because if you can turn your home rink into a fortress and come away with a 99% or 95% win record on your home ice, you only need to win, I mean, I don't know what the percentage would be, but
yeah, probably half your away games.
Yeah.
I mean, as I say, we're looking up now into the top, the top three, where they've both won 20 games. Streatham won the league, winning 22 games. So if you're winning 14 home games, 13 at a push, and taking 7 to 8 away games, maybe even a couple of overtime losses, you're right up there.
Yeah, because those games where it was always in our barn as well. That was the weird part. The one game was always at our barn. Solent would just come in and play an amazing road game.
Yeah.
Just clinical road game hockey and would get away with, come away with that win. If they can work out how to do that every single away, 90% of the time when they go away from home, they're there. And they've got the components to do it. I mean, obviously, as we mentioned, Kane Russell and Liam Coleman. They've also got Charlie Wedge, who's developing quite well. And then they've also got Christian Nekrasovicius, who is possibly the one name we were worried that we were going to trip over during the course of the playoff weekend. But he's also a very, very solid young developing defenseman on the back end.
Mm. Yeah, he sticks a few points in as well every now and again. He does.
Yeah.
He has got quite a shot actually from the blue line when he gets the space.
Yeah.
To let it go. So yeah, yeah.
And he was brave. He also wanted to taking on Brandon Miles this year as well. anyone brave enough to try and take on Brandon gets a thumbs up in my book.
Yeah, surely he's just the target, isn't he? I mean, we're missing his dance partner in Bailey Chittick this year, which I think you spoke about live. The fact that I think you said live, he hasn't had that many fights this year.
Yeah, we'll get onto that. I think what I think happened there when we get to Streatham, obviously, but
yeah,
Brandon's not been has been a bit quieter when it comes to the fighting this year. Interestingly,
I think I might know the reason behind that, but like you said, we'll get there. Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah. So, Solent Devils then finishing in fourth in the Britain table. 28 games played, they got all of theirs played, 17 wins, 10 losses, 1 OT losses, 35 points. A solid season with the appearance in the playoff final as well. But nothing on the shelf just yet for Alex Murray. I'm sure it is coming soon. Up into third then, the Slough Jets, Smits' young team, frightening the life out of everybody all season long. Ending up in third, purely, I think, on goal difference, because their record with jump was identical, including the going 2-2 against each other throughout the league. So I think this team, they're just going to keep on coming, aren't they?
Yeah, they are the rising force in NHL 1. They are the team I love to watch, but also hate watching, because when I'm watching them, it's against my team at the moment. That triple-headed monster of the Moore brothers and Jack Goodchild is just a cheat code at this level. I know how hypocritical me saying that team is a cheat code at this level is coming from the Stratton fan. I appreciate that.
I was just going to say, I think we actually went with a term that I phrased quite early in this, coined rather early in the season, of the Holy Trinity rather than the three-headed monster. Yes. But they're...
I like my Greek myths.
Yeah. But, I mean, what they've been doing as well, especially like even before the season ended, they're locking these kids in for 2 years.
Yeah, I believe that has to do with the rules around who you can sign at the national level. So National League teams are not allowed to negotiate with players until after their playoffs are done.
Yeah.
So I suspect that was a very smart and very shrewd move on the part of the Jets, not to lock them up just for one season, but to lock them up for two, to make sure that, because guaranteed every National League team in the south of England was going to be contacting Jack Goodchild and the Moore brothers trying I mean, my thinking was the other team in that barn, the Bees, who this year was evident they really need goal scoring, they really need fast-paced players who can move the puck around. I looked at the Moors and I looked at Jack Goodchild, I was like, three guys who know this rink, they play in this rink regularly, these are the three guys the Bees have to get, and by locking them up, but I suspected that probably would have been the move in the offing, and that move has now been totally cancelled out by the fact that they're locked up in this division for the next two seasons.
Yeah, but I think as much as they've probably got aspirations of playing at the higher level, they're particularly Jack and Seb are aware they're young enough. They've got time.
Yeah,
they can spend the next 2 years in this division, hopefully ripping it up, winning trophies for them.
Yeah,
and then they can take their step up.
Yeah, I mean, I would have no doubts that Luca Schmittl has sold them on a grand design that he has for bringing a trophy back to Slough. And obviously they are the centre point of that. And he's, you know, and Jacob Minter as well, obviously has, you know, locked him up as well, because obviously I think he was another player a lot of teams were going to be looking at. I have to agree with a lot of what's been said about the team, which is, the Jets get up to a lot of antics while they're out there, which the issue I think has been is that Lewis English has basically been the only guy I've seen Jets fans say that Lewis English seems to be the only member of the roster that does any of the fighting for them when these antics are happening. I think they need to look at bringing in a big power forward. So, I'll say this now, hands off, he's ours, but they need a Brandon Miles.
They need an enforcer, don't they? But one with a bit of maturity, because that was something they would have learned from the playoff weekend.
Yeah.
Is that these young guys didn't have the mental capacity to deal with that and ended up losing their rag, which, I mean, we saw Jack Goodchild sitting in the box for the final 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Luke Schmittl, you know, that seat had his bum print in on it the entire time. He just kept going backwards and forwards. And if they can get these, because obviously when you're young, the tensions are high, you're going to get frustrated and lose your rag. But, yeah, if they had a couple of, you know, they've got Timo Lindgren, a bit more mature, but, you know, an enforcer level, but with a bit of maturity, could really keep them all in check. And as you say, do that part of the game for them.
Yeah, I think... I mean, it's been watching them because, I mean, like, case in point, one incident I saw, which was this year, I think it was around that time that we were getting suspensions thrown at us left, right and centre, and all of us sat there going, please, no, nobody do anything silly, nobody do anything silly. And post-buzzer, we'd just beaten them in their barn. I think it was Seb Moore. charged into the corner and checked one of our guys immediately after the buzzer had gone. And immediately, Brian Watt went in, and I thought, we're about to see another DOPS hearing here. And amazingly, like, Watty actually calmed the situation down a little bit, along with, I looked over and all of a sudden I saw Ben, Ziggy and Jordan Gregory, like, you know, all on the ice, like, going, no, nobody do anything. No, like, you know, and it's that level of understanding and, you know, level of understanding and experience that, you know, says to the guys, look, we're in this situation here where we can't afford to take any silly penalties or suspensions. So nobody do anything.
Yeah.
You know, just let it slide. And, you know, I think it's case in point, is there was a hit thrown in that game between Chieftains and Jets, and Jets player turned around and lamped Alan Lack in front of the referee. And it's, again, you need somebody that, you know, either gives them the experience to go, look, just walk away from it, or if you're going to do that, do it when the referee's not looking.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, throughout the season, as you say, when Dops was getting involved in a lot of it, to have that level of maturity in your squad to say, look, let's not take any silly sussies, because, I mean, Ty Cathcart missed the playoffs through suspension. He'll miss the first few games of next season because it was a sixth game that he got. An incident which I'd seen, I thought six games was probably a bit harsh, but that's what he got.
I'll be honest, I haven't actually seen that one because I've struggled to keep up at times with everything Dops have been putting out, because they seem to put out so many of them.
Yeah,
this season, but
that one didn't go out. I acquired it.
Yeah,
from somewhere.
but you ultimately you don't want your Ty Cathcarts and your Seb Moores and your Jack Goodchilds taking the 10-minute misconducts and getting into the chippy stuff. You know, you need players out there who you're okay with doing the chippy stuff and taking the penalties. And I think that's what they need to do. Ultimately, I will point out, though, at the same time, it's worked. It worked for them this year.
Yeah.
They became a nightmare to play against because they would draw penalties and they would capitalize off of the back of that with the power play.
Yeah.
So, on the one hand, it does work, but I think they need players that mean that Jack Goodchild isn't sat in the box for 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It's almost like, you know, they need a gratuitous player to take those penalties so that the Flair guys can stay out there. Because, yeah, that's exactly what they would do. And it got to the stage where I think Chelmsford were 2-2 with them across the season. And you'd look at it and you say, don't try and physically bully them, because they draw the penalties from you. And then their speed is just all over you.
Yeah, I recall one game for us where JJ Pitchley was progressively getting more and more wound up by the stuff they were doing to him. And at no point did any of the Jets players get sent to the box. But guess who did? JJ Pitchley. Twice.
Time again.
Yeah. So, but they're an organisation on the rise. In this league, I fully anticipate, if not this coming season after, they'll be league champions. I fully expect them to win, like, be competing for the cups. Like, you know, obviously, I want to see my boys win everything again next year. But, you know, that you cannot count on that with the way this division is developing, with the way teams are improving. And the Jets, they now have the fact that they said, look, we've improved again on this season. We made the cup final. We finished third. We made the playoff weekend. If you come and play for us, you'll help put us that little bit further over the top, and there'll be players who want to be part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think they'll remain exciting to watch as well. They were, the cup final they were part of was, from what I've heard, I didn't make it to either, but two of the most incredible games of hockey.
Yeah, I count myself amongst the lucky people who got to be in both arenas for both of those games. And they were two of the best defensive games by both teams I've ever seen. Goaltending duel for the ages between Danny Milton and Brett Macy, and the fact that in that second leg it went 58 minutes before Lucas had to basically say, right, I've got to pull the netminder because I'm down by one and I really, really need that extra goal.
Yeah.
And that was the decider. That says it all about how good this team really is and how good it will be going forward.
Yeah. And as you say, as fans of the teams that are just sitting slightly above them, it's quite frightening.
Yep.
their engines are wearing and they are coming.
Yeah.
So we'll see over the next... next couple of seasons, how they progress. They finished in third, 28, 120, lost 8, 148 goals scored, 96 conceded. Massive shout out to Jack Goodchild, getting 90 points in total across the season, which is astonishing for a young man.
Yeah, so he's unreal at this level.
He's great, and he is. Some of his speed, and he's finishing on the move as well. Absolutely astonishing.
The thing I would love to see is just like a war for the points title between him and if Vanya Antonov returns to this league. I'd love to see that.
Well, the war for the point title was between Jack and the number 9 of the team that finished in second, the Chelmsford Chieftains. Grant Bartlett finished with 92 points this year in total.
And I'm glad you pointed out it was Grant Bartlett, because we all know I have a blind spot when it comes to picking out which Bartlett is which Bartlett.
I think I do as well. We may have called at least one of the goals wrong in the playoff final. One of them needs to wear a double-digit number just to make it easier on us when we're watching it at high speed. But this, I think, especially with the playoffs, because Grant was injured the last time that Chelmsford made the playoffs, he was so up for it. And as I said when I gave him the player of the week from that weekend, we've seen, and put him in my team of the year as well, we've seen a different Grant Bartlett under Lewis Clifford. It's disciplined. It's deadly. It's doing exactly what he should be doing, leaving the petty stuff to one side and just being the hockey player that everyone in the league knows he is.
Well, it's like you said earlier this season when we got that, I think it was 5-3, 4-3 in Chelmsford, where it was all square going into like the final 10 minutes, and then that sucker punch penalty happened, and the entire game shifted on its head.
Oh, that game was 2-0 to Chelmsford into the final 10 minutes.
Oh, okay, I'm getting my games mixed up.
Yeah, before the sucker punch penalty and that was for Cam Bartlett, not Grant.
Okay, sorry, but. But my point I was building to is as you said, at the time you said that at times the team could be its own worst enemy. It could be up, like you said there, 2-0, and then somebody would do something like that, and it just swings all that momentum in the opposition's direction and loses them games. Now, under Lewis Clifford, you have two of the best goal scorers in this league in Cam and Grant, who have an incredible partnership working together, that when they focus that, you know, everything, like you said, when they get rid of the red mist and don't do the things that was getting them penalties, they tear teams apart like they did Slough and like they did Solent in that final.
Yeah. Grant Bartlett was a man possessed that weekend. It was absolutely astonishing stuff to see. Like I said, the standout results in the season were, so they went 2-2 with Streatham, actually. It was 5-3 at the Riverside, the victory, and a shootout win down at the High Road towards the end of the season at 5-4. Again, a couple of little ones that I know was a bit of a bane in Lewis Clifford's sort of ear when he was thinking about early losses away at Invicta and at home to Romford. But I think once he got the level going, as you say, form going into the playoffs, I desperately wanted the Chieftains to get that 4-point weekend in the last weekend of the season, because I did not want to play Romford in the playoffs. That had banana skin written all over it.
Yeah, well, as we said earlier, they did seem to be everybody's banana skin this year.
And I know as well from speaking to Jason that, because it looked like that's how it was going to happen, they were planning for that for a long time. fortunately, so they got a win in Streatham on a shootout, and then a victory down in Invicta that put them in second position, which is a massive boost up on last year's finish, where they finished fifth.
Massive improvement over the season.
Yeah, and I think it's without doubt with what Lewis Clifford has brought in that he built around the core. Obviously, the Bartletts, TJ Fillery, Kieran Rayner, these guys that were the Ollie Baldock, a massive, massive part, especially of the attacking things of Chieftains. But then adding virtually every player that came in was a National League level player.
Yeah, I think. So this is the thing I felt about Chelmsford last year when they finished fifth, was that you were an organisation that was kind of trying to figure out over the last couple of seasons, did you want to rebuild or did you want to go for trophies?
Mm.
And there was a struggle, seemed to be a back and forth going on where it was either one or the other. And it, as a result, things weren't moving forward and it wasn't working. And then last season, even though with the fifth place finish, making it to the cup final, everything seems to be really clicking into place. And then this year, everything really has clicked into place. You know, Damon Porter's come in, absolutely brilliant pick, like import pickup, the kind of import pickup that everybody is insanely jealous of at this level with 52 points.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as you said, Lewis Clifford has found a way to focus Grant and Cameron to, you know, zone out all that negative stuff. He's brought in Alan Lack, who is like one of my favorite players of all time, who lives in the blue paint and will just sweep loose pucks in and will deliver cross checks and shoves to anyone who gets too close to him.
Yeah.
To him. But and also another one of my favorite players arriving in Lee Jamieson as well. Somebody who can absolutely boss things from the blue line, is a quarterback, you know, power play quarterback at this level. And then also Jay King, who I think he's had one of his best seasons in terms of point production at this level this year with 4 goals and 13 assists. And then also you add in Benny Russell. Like these are all guys who would not look out of place on any of the teams in the league above.
No, of course not. And there's players in there that were there before. The likes of Ollie Baldock, Dan Fay, Ethan Reed were all playing up at that higher level.
Yeah,
so
yeah, but and that
experience wise,
but that to me that's part of the key as well is that Lewis realised I need to keep these guys here who are part of this original group, and I just need to add these elements in.
Mm.
And then obviously you've got the late season pickup as well of Tommy Huggett, who, while, you know, I think we had this discussion at the weekend where I was a bit confused by the fact that Tommy's played 9 games and only had 4 assists, but it showed during the course of that game that, like, right now he's doing other things out there on the ice that statistics don't really measure, and is performing just as well for the team. And next year, once he's way more settled in, I would predict him to go back probably to the old Tommy Huggett that we saw before.
Yeah, I mean, he works his bag off every time he's on the ice, and I like seeing him on the little line with TJ Fillery.
Oh, yeah.
Because the two of them coming down the outside, just these tiny little guys that are so quick and work so hard. I think people then, that was making space in the middle for whoever was in that line at the time, whether it had been Holden Barnes-Garner or Ollie Baldock. Between Barnes-Garner, Ollie Baldock and Damon Porter, that little trio, they notched up so many points throughout the season. They really got a little thing going.
Yeah, and that's the thing you really need as well to be successful. It, for any hockey team, it's all well and good having Lack, Bartlett and Bartlett chipping in the lion's share of the points, or Damon Porter chipping in such a huge amount of points. But if you've only got one line and one guy on another line who are producing, it's so easy to shut your entire team down if somebody can work out how to do it. So if you've got the guys like, you know, Fillery, but Baldock and Barnes-Garner, who are also chipping in on the regular, you know, that secondary scoring is so important to have. And it's big part of why things turned around this year so well is that they got that secondary scoring. Because outside, in previous seasons, when I've watched Chelmsford play us in Streatham, outside of the Bartlett brothers, I really did struggle at times to see where that secondary scoring was coming from when watching the course of the games. And another, I mean, another player as well who's after, because I think I said to you, I wasn't really that impressed with the showings I saw of Sasha Maltsev last season. But this year, he's now settled here in the UK. I think he, you know, it obviously wasn't helped that he was, I think ice time was limited because of Peter Cech's presence on the roster and the rules around imports. You know, this year, 28 games, 11 goals, 12 assists, 23 points on the season. He's another, you know, diamond pickup by the club.
Yeah, incredible hands on him. His understanding of the game is improving as well, especially with what he's being asked to do. Obviously, not in his first language. I don't think anyone in the Chieftains organisation can speak Ukrainian, so it must have been a bit of a struggle. But they're
hockey's a bit of a universal language at the end, usually.
But they're, yeah, as you say, and I think it's actually only Sasha Maltsev and TJ Fillery that played every game for the Chieftains this year, which is a greater testament to the both of them, to their fitness as well as anything else.
You are correct, sir. It is only TJ Fillery and Sasha Maltsev who played both games.
All the games.
The Bartletts, Ollie Baldock and Holden Barnes-Garner were close, and Alan Lack were close behind them with a mixture of 26 and 27 games.
Yeah, I don't think Alan Lack's been 100% fit since 2001.
It's like I said to you on the broadcast, Alan Lack always looks like he's in the war, but that's basically because of the way Alan Lack plays, I feel.
Cliff said much the same to me before the game, where after we'd done our pre-match chat, and he'd sort of said, like, you know, Lackey would go, he'd come back looking, I think I said on the broadcast, he'd come back looking like he'd just come back from a tour in Afghanistan. He'd sit down for 45 seconds, and it'd be like, you ready to go, Lackey? He's like, yeah. That's just such a weapon at this level. And say, all them guys have been not only terrific on the ice, they've been terrific off the ice with the fans. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more fan interaction with the Chieftains. I know last year when Petter was in the roster, we had a lot of like the signing table and things like that. I think we need to see a little bit more of that from Chelmsford and a little bit more of an output on their social media.
Yeah, I think when you announced Ben, I think it was like you, I think you tweeted that Lee Jameson had won man of the match in one of your games on your own feed. And I think I had to follow up with you. I went, mate, am I reading this right? Have you guys signed Lee Jameson? Because
you didn't know.
I haven't seen a single press release.
I was
checking your roster page going, has he maybe like got it wrong and said like maybe he means Grant Bartlett? Because I was like, there's only other, or Logan Prince. Has Logan Prince won the man of the match? Because I was looking for a player with nine in the net, in the number. And then you're like, no, it's Lee Jameson. And like, oh, well, so why did nobody announce it?
Yeah, I think it would have only been John at NOHL roster updates that probably put it out.
I know,
obviously, I run a social media page for this podcast. I know how difficult it is to run it all the time. It's almost like having a part-time job alongside your full-time job. But, yeah, it would be nice to see a little bit more from the Chieftains. We have just seen one come out tonight where they've made playoff merchandise, playoff-winning merchandise. So Might get a little bit of that to go with my nice hat.
Yeah.
As you were saying, the secondary scoring, I think that's what really turned the tide in the semi-final of the playoffs was three goals in 70 seconds, TJ Fillery, Sasha Maltsev and Jay King, that secondary scoring line, and that's when Jets lost their heads and Chelmsford put their foot down and got away with the game. And it was, yeah, as I said, now I've only seen the last few seconds of the playoff final from, I think it was from Nicky Watt, was actually watching it on his computer. So
I'm still waiting with bated, like, because all my colleagues at work as well are like, when do we get to see it? When do we get to see you doing your doing your John Motson impression?
Because, well, when I spoke to Graham earlier, he asked me, like, how did I feel about it? Did I enjoy it? And I said, you know what? I loved every second of it. And without blowing my own trumpet, I think I'm really good at it. I think I was born to do it. It's something I've always wanted to do. I used to want to be a football commentator. That was what I wanted. When people said to you as a kid, what do you want to do for a job? That's what I said. So, yeah, for me to do that, on that game and then release episode 100 afterwards. Just mind blowing. And
it was one of those, the stars have aligned moments.
Yeah. And it was a pleasure to call it with you as well. I know you've got the experience of calling your own team winning the playoffs as well. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, for me, it all goes back to like, was it 2000 and I think it's 2010, maybe 2011, when I was doing, because I used to do the media stuff for the what is now the NIHL Coventry Blaze, but what was then the ENL Blaze. Mm. And we basically realised that, because we used to basically just film, no, because we were like one of the first clubs at that level to have a highlight pack. And one of the things that was fed back to us in the off season by fans was, we want commentary. We need commentary over this. We don't like the music that you put over the top of it. We want commentary. And so, okay. And I was very lucky that there was a young man in Coventry called Paul Wheeler who wanted to do it. And he offered to work alongside me and taught me the ropes, as it were. I kind of took a break from it for a few years, and then I think for a long time. And then last year, MK rolls around, and Joe Scott says to me, "Do you want to commentate the playoff weekend with me?" Because he'd been doing the Bees gig, and they asked him to do MK. And I was like, "Are you sure?" And he went, "Mate, there is you know so much about hockey, like you've got to be the guy to do it."
Yeah.
It led to some great conversations with our fan bases over the fact that it was like, we've got a Solent fan and a Stretton fan and, you know, doing this playoff commentary together. And everyone's like, how are you coexisting? How are you going to coexist?
Yeah, well, I remember when it came down to the final and I come up and I see you boys in the morning. And I was like, is there an extra mic? Do you need me to be Switzerland in between the two of you?
Yeah, I think as Anthony Russell quite put it quite aptly that weekend on Facebook, he said, I want you two to be more Homer than a member of the Simpson family.
I'm sure we would have been this year if it would have ended up a different final.
But yeah, I mean, like, but the one thing I would love to do is I'd love to get to do like the Sunday morning game for Stretton versus Billingham this year, but I don't think that's going to be in the cards. So, unless the people who organise the event are listening and heard me in Ali Pally and want to give me a shot.
But, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
like, it's doing that, commentary, it's difficult. I don't want to say it's, like, because I don't want to seem too big-headed, but, like, it can be so easy to do, and it can be so daunting to do all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, we're slightly sidetracking. What we were both thrown into with that weekend was commentating on NIHL 2 games, which we don't really watch a great deal of. We don't really, with Basingstoke, it's a little bit different because a lot of the players are familiar to us.
But
we were literally, for the first period or two, you know, the sheet with the numbers, quick look, you know.
Yeah.
And we kind of got there in the end. It was I was in at the deep end with Guildford against Basingstoke in the first game.
I baptism of fire.
And then you took the final absolutely brilliantly on the Sunday, obviously having that day before where we'd done the Huskies and we'd done the Buffalo. I didn't call them the Bison. And we'd done the Buffalo.
Yeah, we finally got that one out of our system.
And it was... Yeah, it was terrific. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. Six games, as I said with Graham. I really liked the setup. I think the weekend went terrifically. I think it was a great success. But four games in a day is a push. But there's not really another way you're going to do it if you're going to amalgamate the weekends. And there is only as many hours as there are in the day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we got back to the hotel on that first day until, God, midnight. I think we were eating pizza in the hotel lobby at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
It was. I was staying a little bit just outside of London, so I think I left Ali Pally at about 11.
Yeah.
But that was from a 6 a.m. start. So
it was
a long, long day, but worth every second.
Oh yeah, it was worth every second. It was a huge honour, and like I'm so grateful to the IHA events team for inviting us along to do that.
Yeah, as am I. Lauren and Tim, what a fantastic job they do with the camera work and the producing of it all, because that is quite a skill. And yeah, and they have offered me to come to Milton Keynes and commentate when Chelsea would come there in the league, which I am going to take them up on.
I need to have a word with them. They haven't invited me to Milton Keynes.
come and jump up with me. I'm sure that we come as a package.
Yeah,
I'm sure they'll take with that. But we will move on to not only the league champions, but the Britain Cup champions, the South Cup champions, and could possibly be the National One North and South champions, the Streatham Red Hawks. Obviously, we're not going to focus too much on the one you didn't win, because as you're pointing out your jerseys, everyone can see what's on my head. Those joining us on YouTube. But yeah, I think what an incredible season. I mean, the Grand Slam would have just been almost unthinkable, but three so far, possibility for one more. I don't think there can be too many complaints anywhere.
No, there are no complaints. I think Dawn, our owner, summed it up best on the Saturday. She said, you can't win them all. She went into the locker room, and I think Ben was up. Painter, our head coach, was very, very upset and disappointed to have lost the semi-final, because obviously everybody wanted that shot at the Grand Slam. But Dawn summed it up quite well with what she put on Twitter, where she said she's still proud of everybody. She's, very proud of him and everything he's achieved with us as a coach over the last couple of seasons, and that you can't win everything, and it just wasn't to be that day. You know, as I said, Solent have that one game against us every year, and unfortunately that was that one game. But three trophies at the end of the day, that's a season any team at any level is going to dream about having. I think in the case of the cup, we got really nervous about that one. That was going to slip away. The longer that game went on, Anthony Russell sat with that one with me for the Slough Jets Cup final, and I became progressively more and more animated in the stands as it went on. The difference this year, I think, very much has been a combination of two things for us, which was everybody got better. Everybody recruited to get better very, very well over the summer. And Ben changed the philosophy, I feel, of the team. The last three seasons, we've gone for overwhelming firepower for victory. And I think two seasons of getting to Coventry and losing in the final to a very well-drilled, very well-run, very professional Solway team led to Ben maybe reassessing that. This is just my opinion of how he potentially reassessed it, which was, what is the point in us having this monstrous offense that can score 20 goals in a game if it can't stop 21 the other way?
Mm.
Or what is the point in us having this monstrous offense that might be able to score one but then can't stop two the other way? The point was, we need to be able to stop the opposition scoring, and we can then focus on scoring three and make sure that we shut them out. And the design of the team, I feel, echoes that this year. You know, we lost Vanya Antonov, which immediately carved something like 50 points out of the scoring ability. We lost Scott Bailey, who decided to go travelling to start the season. We also lost Gerard Lane, who had also gone travelling. But then we brought in, we had a surprise late addition in Luke Brittle, and then JJ Pitchley and Josh Martin arrived, who are both National League caliber players.
Yeah.
And I think that's something else Ben thought about, was that we need more players in this roster who are of that caliber. And I mean, especially in the case of JJ, he's a player who has gone a long time in his career without winning a trophy. And there's a wonderful video of his reaction to winning the cup final that I filmed from the bench. And you just got JJ just there in the middle, just celebrating like mad. And yeah, I think it, you know, it to him especially, it's I think it's meant a lot this year to win something. I remember him skating off the ice after the, I think it was the second party on the pad we'd had in a week, and him saying to somebody's effect of, I'm kind of bored of winning now, Chris.
Well, you had that incredible.
And he said it weeks, rather, obviously saying it rather sarcastically.
Yeah, I mean, three trophies in 3 weeks on the ice at the High Road there, the way that it all kind of planned out, that it ended up that way.
Yeah, 3 weeks of me having to run from my position at the top of the stands to get down to ice level to film everything happening on the ice. But obviously we started the season with a bit of a blip. There was that 3-0 loss. There was the 3-2 loss to Oxford. And I think we lost in your barn as well. Which had and obviously the 4-2 loss at the start of the season in the challenge match, which I think had everybody kind of looking around going, you know, and at the time the new elements of the roster, Callum Bennett was really fitting in well, Luke Brittle was still kind of finding a rhythm and, you know, gelling with the team. And you know, because he had been out of hockey for a while. So as Ben kept saying, once he finds his feet, he'll be unbelievable. JJ and Josh were still kind of also settling in. Both were putting up big assist numbers to start the season, but they weren't putting in the goals, which had a few people saying to me, have we not got. And, you know, the player that the press releases said we'd got. And then JJ just ignited. And, you know, he's ended the season with 10 goals and 16 assists. I think I spoke to Ben, did a post-game interview with Ben at one point, and Ben said, now JJ has got one, he's going to start getting more. And it was unfortunate, I think, that JJ got his first one for us, and then he got the big suspension the week after. But then he came back from that suspension and he was just on rocket fuel. And then the same when Josh came back, when the suspension was appealed and overturned, like Josh came back and Josh was netting goals towards the tail end of the season. And Josh, I think as well, had scored his first for us the week before he got the big suspension as well.
They couldn't really get going then from that, could they? But
yeah.
The points were spread right across the roster from Streatham because, as you were saying earlier, you didn't have that out-and-out goal scorer, and it was more focused on defensively, which obviously worked because Danny Milton ended the year with 9 shutouts in total.
Yes.
Astonishing.
Yes, the defence and Danny Milton just went into beast mode this year. like Danny ending with 1.65 goals against is just absolutely, 9 shutouts is just insane.
Yeah.
I think he claimed the crown of, not just statistically, I think he claimed the crown of being the best netminder at this level this year. But I honestly think that shift in being ultra defensive is the plan that Ben was working on. As Anthony Russell said when he did his interview with Ben post Solway defeat, Ben looked like he was already clicking something behind the eyes. And I think this year, and it's interesting that we didn't have to massively overhaul the defence to do it. We only had to bring in Callum Bennett. We also got, we got lucky in that Jack Hopps was originally going to be up with the Bees most of the time, and then Jack got released by the Bees, and so we were able to bring him back on full time, and he's a really solid defenseman at this level. And we've got a young developing defenseman in Preston Toombs who is really, really solid as well, who's got a really good future ahead of him.
He's got a cracking mullet as well.
Yes, he has a brilliant haircut.
I think your guys have rocked that, actually.
Yeah, I think he takes his inspiration from Josh Ely Newman because, I really struggled at one point when we first got them, to tell the difference between Josh Ely Newman and Benny Ely Newman when doing the updates on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then I realised that Josh is the one with the mullet and Ben is the one without. And it's become very easy from there.
Excellent. But I think I mean, you've got your end of season do coming up, I'm sure, after the Coventry weekend, where you'll have your supporters player, managers player, whatnot. Someone I think will be walking away with probably an armful of trophies from that is Ziggy Beasley.
Yeah,
I love Ziggy.
I love Ziggy as well. Like, he is just he's I think he's sweeter than a chocolate cake is Ziggy Beasley. he has really stepped into that. It's interesting that he and Vanya are like best friends, and he's basically stepped in to fill that gap that Vanya left.
Yeah,
as that guy on the first line who. His trademark signature is basically snapshot to the knee, going down to one knee from the slot area. And that's become so satisfying to watch time and time again this season.
Yeah, it's been incredible the way that he's... Yeah. I mean, I think I gave him player of the week like three times, and then I couldn't squeeze him into my team of the year.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't all based on stats, but, you know, he was a lot lower than the guys that had made it in. But it's just because of the spread of how it was at Streatham. But there's obviously because, you know, there'll be talk because of what happened in the playoffs and, you know, people will say you're the best team until you're not. People are now, there's been a target on Streatham's back for years. Obviously, Invicta took the cup last year. That was pretty much by default that Streatham weren't in it because of a clerical error.
Yeah, but ultimately, at the end of the day with that, you can only beat what's put in front of you. And in that case, we made a mistake and it cost us. And I'm, you know, I don't believe Invicta should have an asterisk put on that because of us. You know.
Now obviously we're seeing Slough come in as well. I mean, as you say, does it get boring winning everything all the time?
No. This is the short answer. It's making the games I do get to go to way more, you know, entertaining.
Yeah.
And which can only be good for, especially can only be good for like if we've got new fans turning up, because there as much as there are bound to be so many, because I've seen it, there are fans more, because one of the points I've always made to people who say that we should move up a league is that we have what I term as a very transitory fan base, which is we have people who are there 1 week and then they are at the local, they're at Millwall or Charlton or up the train line at Arsenal and Chelsea, because those are only like 25 to 30 minutes away by train. They pick it, or they're at a show in London, or they just, or, you know, also Streatham is not a wildly affluent area, so they don't always have the money to attend every single week.
Yeah.
So, but I am noticing more and more of the familiar faces returning, and I'm noticing more and more people buying the merchandise at the stands and at the merch store and everything. So I think the more competitiveness of the league in terms of us having the kind of games like the shootout loss, the overtime loss that we had to Slough, the 1-0 win in the cup final, it's all actually really good, both for the league as a whole and for us in terms of retaining fans, because I know when the national and NIHL1 crossover thing, I remember having a conversation with a fan on the way out of the arena after we'd just lost to, I want to say Swindon, in the playoff quarterfinal, and we knew that that was the last time we were having to play a national caliber side, and this fan was like, it's going to be boring next year when we're beating everybody. And I pointed out, look, you can only play what's in front of you, and also we would be getting it's also going to be boring watching us getting hammered every week by teams that we just can't compete with financially. And now I kind of, to some degree, you know, sometimes I'm like, he was kind of right.
Well, I mean, but then
we have absolute corkers like that cup final. I'm like, nah, things are closing up here now. You know, I mean, the fact that we didn't have, I think we don't have anybody inside the top. I think it's like almost inside the top. I think it's like top where Ziggy Beasley doesn't appear until like 15th or something on the top overall scorers in NI. The Elite Prospects combines both North and South.
Yeah.
But I think Ziggy is our only scorer inside the top 20. No, he's where is he? He's at number 25. Largely, the large majority of the other players inside that top 25 are from North 1.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the Slough, obviously, you've got the Jets, you've got Brindley Caps, you've got guys from the Invicta Dynamos all ahead of him. And, like, whereas, like, last year, I think we had three guys inside the top 10.
Yeah.
Of that overall list.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah, Vanny, Danny Ingoldsby, and possibly even Brando might have been up there as well.
But... Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's been a slowed down year for our offense, but I think that again has a lot to do with the change in philosophy that Ben's pushed for the team with, which is win games by four, you know, win, make sure that we're not being conceded on by overcommitting on, you know, a load of forward rushes and just bombarding the net and turning it over in the offensive zone and inviting counter-attacks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you say, paints his theory on how he wanted the season to go has clearly worked.
Well, his best quote to me, he said all season, was good teams find ways to win and defense wins championships. And it's certainly proven correct so far in three games.
Yeah, it has.
You know, from a blip where we were wondering, you know, looking at a lot of the new faces and wondering whether it was working out, this team has massively come together, overcome the adversity of, even if it was self-inflicted, with the suspensions and the injuries that happened in mid-season, overcame all of that, got through that cup semi-final that was happening around the time of that, and then has pushed on to win a fourth league championship. And I find myself now hoping we get a fifth one next year, just purely for the WWE Booker T memes that I could use for.
Well, they did take it this year with 28 games, 22 wins, 3 losses, 2 OT losses, 1 tie, 146 goals scored, 53 conceded, 47 points. Gave them the championship, obviously defeating Slough over 2 legs in the cup final and the Little Britain Cup mini table, completely undefeated in that, 8 games, 8 wins, 16 points. A cracking year. And now, of course, we look forward to Coventry, where they'll face the Billingham Stars. I discussed this in a bit more depth, actually, with Graham earlier, that, you know, I think it's really competitive. My money is on Streatham.
Obviously, my money is on us as well. But 2 years of heartbreak with it really gives me pause at times. But then at the same time, I think, this isn't Solway we're facing. Billingham's a completely different animal.
Mm.
Billingham have lost more games than us this year. Ultimately, rule number one I always stick to, what is on the paper doesn't matter as soon as you're out on the ice. It doesn't matter. Like, both teams start at 0-0. And they've got 3 or 4 guys who could really do some damage if we don't find a way to contain them. But Slough had 3 or 4 guys who could do a lot of damage if we didn't figure out a way to contain them. And I think the biggest problem that the team had to overcome for this, to try and win this, has been we've always kind of had it our own way, shall we say. Mm. And, you know, last year's final and the final year before that was kind of the first time where we really came up against somebody where it was a bigger challenge. And I think this year, with the challenge, as I said, the challenges that the team went through, having to play games where we only had two and a bit lines, games where we only had to play 4 defensemen, play like massive amount of suspensions. I think that's all kind of like, and you know, it's cliche, but you go in that locker room and they are like the band of brothers. They will go to war for one another. And I think everything they've been through this year to win what they've won is possibly the edge that they need going into this one.
Yeah.
You know, I said it on Twitter earlier. It's like, can they finally do it? Can they win the big one that has eluded them for 2 years? And can they finish the story?
Yeah, I think they can. We'll obviously wait and see. It came out, if you're not going to make it to Coventry, there is streaming passes available. I don't think it's been confirmed who the commentators are yet. You might be looking at one of them here at least.
Again, if I am available and I will be in Coventry.
You've got to get those plugs in there. Chris, yeah. We started this by saying we're not going to take up 2 hours of people's time, and then look at us, we've gone for nearly 2 hours. So, absolute pleasure to have you on. Obviously, yeah. You came on last year and just spoke about Streatham, so it's great to go through the whole league with you. As I said, it was an absolute pleasure to share the gantry and the microphones with you for commentary over the playoff weekend. Hopefully, it's not the last time we get to do it together.
Hopefully not. And it's been a pleasure to have me on. Thank you for having me on. I hope everyone's enjoyed our perspective.
Yeah. I think we've kept it quite light as well. So
yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much it now. I think I probably have just one episode left of ZPG for the rest of this season. And then, as you can see, it's been on the social media posts that we're doing the ZPG network for next year, and we're looking at getting loads more podcasts for teams individually to get as much hockey content out there as possible for the fans. So, Chris, thank you so much for your time, mate.
Thanks, mate.
A huge thank you to Graham and to Chris for joining me for this sort of extra special extended version of Zero Pucks Given, where we have just reviewed the North 1 Morley, the South 1 Britain, and, of course, now we look forward to that national final at Coventry, where the Billingham Stars take on the Streatham Red Hawks, and we find out who does hockey belong to this year. Is it the North or is it the South? My money is on that trophy going to SW16. Well, 102 in the bank. What an incredible season it's been. I've thoroughly enjoyed every second of doing Zero Pucks Given for you guys. Obviously, a massive part of it for me has been the Chieftains winning the playoffs. Has been absolutely incredible. Getting to commentate on that game is just something that I don't think I'll ever be able to top. But hopefully, moving into the new season, I will definitely be going up to Milton Keynes to join Lauren and Tim up there and do a little bit of commentary when the Chieftains head up to Milton Keynes. Hopefully, if there's anyone else that would like me to sort of come and do it for them, when the videos come out, I'll start sharing them all as well, in case you didn't hear it live. So I will be making myself available for that during the season, which I thoroughly enjoy. So I don't even see it as work. It's just something that we really enjoy. And I mean, for you guys that have all been listening, the feedback I've been getting over the last few months has been incredible. Really have enjoyed interacting with a lot of new people, especially at the playoffs as well. Met a lot of new faces. Then over the summer, we're going to start getting this ZPG network together. And then gradually we'll start releasing the hosts, the little sort of test episodes, little trailers and everything, so that you can get familiar with the people who are going to be delivering all the news for your club in your area. And like I said, if you want to get involved, if you follow any club in South 1, South 2, even North 1, North 2, and you want to get involved in this ZPG network, send me a message on any of the social medias or send me an email at zeropucksgivenpodcast@gmail.com. And we can absolutely sort it out and see how we're going to go with it. It's something that I'm really excited about. It's a Sports Social Podcast Network are on board with it as well. So we've got a good little platform there to get it all out and get it as big as we can possibly get it. My final few thanks then, all the guests that I've had on this year, absolutely fantastic. Everyone's been such a great open talker. We've gone from, you know, having the players in the Britain division early doors, you know, Christian Moore, Stano Laschek, that was absolutely brilliant getting down to Stano's career. Of course, we've been joined by Justin Wong from the Mighty Ducks, who was Kenny Wu in the Mighty Ducks. That was terrific. And then we've gone, you know, we've had our mental health special with the episode with Nick Rothwell that was absolutely incredible. The Danny Myers episode, which I loved every second of, you know, there's people even in hockey in this country like Danny who just want to see it progress, and we need to give these people as much backing and as much exposure as we can to get the sport to move forward. So that Danny Myers episode was cracking. It's probably one of my favourites of the year. But yeah, every single guest that I've had on, really have enjoyed speaking to each and every one of you, especially the ones that I've managed to meet in person afterwards as well. You see, I sort of share pictures on social media of you know, when we meet up. I can't help but love Ziggy Beasley, man. The smile on that guy's face just makes me happy every time I see him. But yeah, I think it's been a fantastic season. I've loved every minute of it, and I'm really looking forward to getting started again late August, early September, and getting all the details out for you again. I really do hope you've enjoyed listening or watching. Obviously, we've been doing a lot on YouTube as well this year. So just make sure, if you're following along, follow on all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, X, Threads, TikTok, Snapchat. We're over there on all of them. And you can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, so that way you do not miss a thing. And as we move into next season, when more podcasts come in and join the ZPG network, we'll be firing all that out there as well, so that you can make sure that you don't miss anything that's going on at your club. Thank you once again for listening. I'll see you next time.
Hey guys, it's Ben from Zero Pucks Given. We've had our sponsorship with Manscaped extended by 1 month, so you've got one more month to get your 20% off and free shipping on all of Manscaped products from manscaped.com. As you can see from this before picture, I know I look like somebody who used to be in good shape. I'm a little bit of a gorilla. I'm quite a hairy guy. So I took the Lawnmower 5.0 into the shower, and then with the interchangeable head, you take the long hair off with the clipper head, you flick it off for the razor head, and then you take the short hair off. And considering how hairy I am, this is the outcome. I think that's pretty darn good. Of course, once it's there, you look like a bit of a plucked chicken. And you kind of go all the way down, use the skin-safe razor blade, the clipper blade, and that downstairs to get all of that cleared off. And then when you're done, you use the crop soother and the crop preserver, which is like a deodorant for your balls. Stops any of that sweating, any of that chafing, if you're sort of driving a lot, sitting in a van all day or something like that. Or even if you're being active, going to the gym or training or anything fitness-wise, it stops from all that rubbing and chafing, particularly when you wear the Manscaped boxers that are also in the picture, as they've got a nice sort of silk pouch at the front, which keeps you all feeling nice and fresh. So then after that, I've used the weed whacker to get all the hairs around from up my nostrils and in my ears, which as you get older, trust me, they all start to appear out of nowhere. And then I've used my moisturisers with a little bit of bulldog stuff, actually, to just on my head after I've shaved that with a razor blade. You can get a Manscaped beard trimmer as well, which is something I'm definitely going to look at. It's got a lot of different attachments on it, so you can sort of do the lines in your beard and sort of skin fade it down, which is a really, really good product. I'm hoping I might get hold of one of them quite soon. So, yeah, I think these products are absolutely brilliant. I do not put my name to anything that I don't like. And as you can see, I use them, and I think they're great. So use the code 0PUCKS20, manscaped.com.
Social Podcast Network.